is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. Coy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hi there, everybody. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts for this Wednesday afternoon, April 18th. We're coming to you live from our One Buffalo studio in Orchard Park. John Murphy alongside Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Filling in today, Steve Tasker, not quite ready to get going on a regular basis. That starts Monday with One Bills Drive. And so, Chris, we're happy to have you here today. Thanks for filling in.
Yeah, no problem. A couple of the swan song additions here.
The John Murphy Show. Yes, we've got a coming up on Friday, by the way, at 3.05 p.m., we're going to have a special sale out in the lobby of all the John Murphy Show gear.
Paraphernalia.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll autograph if you'd like, Chris. I'll give you something if you'd like. And we're going to get rid of all the shirts and all the logos, the JMS logos, because that show ends on Friday. The new show, One Bills Live, starts on Monday. Steve Tasker here on a regular basis starting Monday.
You're not keeping anything for your man cave?
You've
got to keep something for the man cave at home. Yeah. Put it on a shelf or something.
I've got so much Bills gear at home.
Well, it's not necessarily Bills gear. It's JMS gear.
JMS gear. Yeah, it'll be collector's items, actually. That's coming up. No, I'm just kidding. There is no sale. There will be no sale of that.
Oh, but come on. You can't leave me on like that.
I'll give you some stuff.
Okay.
I won't sell it to you. Good show. We're glad to have Chris here as the Bills move into day three of their offseason conditioning program. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the draft, obviously. And we're going to talk about the schedule, which comes out tomorrow. Here's the lineup for guests today. Coming up at 12:30, the bottom of this hour, Nathan Peterman joins us, Bills' second-year quarterback. Last year's draft pick, who got the two starts last year. Nathan Peterman will be live in studio with us at 12:30 as the offense wraps up its share of work in this off-season conditioning program day. Coming up at around 1:15 or so, Tony Pauline will join us to talk about the draft. He is one of the foremost draft experts in the country. He is the draft analyst and the host of the Draft Analyst podcast. Tony Pauline, who knows a thing or two about what to expect at the draft, he will be joining us today at 1:15. At 1:30, Chris is going to break away a little bit and head upstairs to the offices because there's a special contract signing coming up at 1:30. Chris, tell us about that.
Yeah, Fred Jackson's here today, going to sign a one-day contract to officially retire from the NFL as a Buffalo Bill. Not was it only his idea. There was a lot of fan. There was a surge of fan support to have Fred do that, and Fred's always kind of been a player that is a fan favorite, and he's kind of followed through on that with the cooperation of the Bills, obviously. So he's going to take care of that at 1:30. I'll be upstairs with him when that happens. We'll be talking to him, and you know, that whole deal will kind of air on, you know, the MSG side of the John Murphy Show. And obviously you'll hear everything on the radio as I kind of talk to him and about his NFL career coming full circle here.
And then Fred will join us here in the studio at 2 o'clock, and we'll hopefully come up with different questions. Hey, what do you...
Yeah, I think we should plan on that.
Yeah. Steve and I were talking yesterday. What does it take to get that honor of retiring with the team? And it has to be that you finish your career somewhere else, right? So I said to Tasker, yeah, you finished your career. You know, Steve would merit that sort of consideration, but he finished as a Buffalo Bill. He did, in fact, retire from the game as a Buffalo Bill. But other than that, what do you think it takes? What are, and I know there are no, you know, written down regulations about what it takes, but what do you think the common denominator is for a guy who gets to come back and retire, one-day contract and retire as a member of that team?
I would say in most cases, you know, it's because the bulk of your career and the bulk of your success in the league happened at that other team, so you go back there. But maybe that's not always the case, so I would say the exceptions to that would be a player that feels they're best remembered as a Bill, a Falcon, a, you know, Jet, whatever. I think that kind of precipitates that type of a move. And obviously, I think most teams are accommodating. It'd be kind of interesting to see if there was ever an instance where the team was like, yeah, that's a great idea, but no, we're not going to do that.
There probably have been, right? Not publicized. But.
Well, I think the most interesting thing is the fact that when you sign a player to a one-day contract, they do take up a roster spot for a day.
Yeah.
So you've got to.
Is that why Cap Cappy was released yesterday?
Well, I hope not.
I hope not.
I don't think they're at the limit right now. So I don't think it's an issue, and I think that's why a lot of those examples do happen in the offseason where the roster is certainly more flexible and a lot larger. But I did not know that, so it was kind of interesting to know that even though it's a ceremonial contract in every way, shape, or form, Fred, for all intents and purposes, will take up a roster spot
no
for
money
a
involved,
calendar
right?
day.
You have to fit under a cap or anything. No. There's no money involved, right?
No. So I'm not worried about it. No. I found it interesting that as in the NFL's eyes, it does take up a roster position.
And I asked Steve this question. I'll ask you. Do you think there's for the one day that he's under contract this week, is there anything the Bills can ask Fred Jackson to do? Do you need any help down there in digital media?
He liked the offseason program. I mean, maybe he can come down and pump a little iron with the guys. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, that's coming up at 1:30. We will watch Fred Jackson retire as a Bill live on the air here on our television side, MSG. And, of course, you'll hear it on the radio on WGR and our radio affiliates. And then Fred will join us at 2 o'clock. So we got that to look forward to.
And I should mention that Fred, I got together with Fred on the phone yesterday, and he put together what, for all intents and purposes, is his career in his own words and basically thanking Buffalo. So that's on our website right now at buffalobills.com. So if you get an opportunity, be sure to slide over there. And it's basically Fred Jackson in his own words, kind of thanking Buffalo and looking back on a career that I think far exceeded anyone's expectations, even his own, by his own admission.
We'll talk more about Fred. We'll talk with Fred. But it does bear mentioning that his career was unique in the NFL. I've never seen anything like that. And he came here. I remember when he came here, I talked to him his first day here. He had just come from Europe, I believe.
Right.
And the angle I was pursuing, I can't remember if I was working at Channel 7 or Channel 4, probably Channel 7 at the time. The story angle was, here's this guy who just played essentially an entire season, comes here without any break, comes here, and I think it was June, pretty deep into the offseason workouts, and just keeps going. And it was pretty amazing that he had come here and had no chance to catch his breath, and all of a sudden is deeply involved in trying to make an NFL roster. And that, of course, was tied in with the fact that he came from Coe College, Marv Levy's alma mater, which made him unique. But a story unlike really any other you've seen in the NFL. Not only did he make the team, he became a very productive player and a fan favorite. You know, there are productive players who the fans don't warm up to. But the way he played and his approach to the game and the things that he would say in the locker room after games and practices endeared him to fans here in Western New York and all over.
Endeared him to the media, too, because there were a lot of losses, that we had to kind of stomach.
Yeah.
And he had to comment on.
He was a unique performer, both in the way he played and the way he handled the way he played. I thought the way he talked about his performance.
Well, I think the reason he was so appreciated by fans is because you never had to doubt what you were going to get from him every Sunday. And not only that, every practice, every off-season drill. I mean, I think they used to have those competitions with the strength and conditioning staff where they would have the Iron Man of the offseason, the guy that was here the most, the guy that, lifted the most collective weight cumulatively, and all these different little benchmarks that the strength and conditioning staff likes to put out there as a carrot to get guys to heavily participate. And Fred was at the top, I think, 4 straight years running because he loved doing every little thing that was tied to football if he knew it was going to make him a better player. But I think the other thing is, his circumstances make him an easy story to root for. I mean, you want to talk about a circuitous route to the NFL. Playing in the Continental Indoor Football League, playing flag football, and then finally getting a crack at NFL Europe and then lighting it up over there as an offensive MVP of the league over there, and then cracking on the practice squad here in 06 before getting on the roster. And then you think about also, and some of the fans have tweeted at me, as some of this content on Fred has gone up on the website the last couple of days, he had to play alongside 2 first-round picks. I mean, Marshawn Lynch comes in 2007 as the 12th pick in the draft. C.J. Spiller comes in a few years later as the 9th pick in the draft. And he outlasted both of them.
Right. So, outperformed him, really.
Well, yeah, in many ways he did, yeah. I mean, Marshawn was a little bit of a different circumstance. It was clear he didn't want to be here.
Right.
CJ just could never get it going on a consistent basis outside of that 2012 season. So Fred was a model of consistency, and in the end, the Bills chose that.
And aside, we talked about what a great performer he was. how beloved he was among the media and the fans. He was beloved among his teammates, too. And this kind of hit home for me a couple of months ago, Chris, when Fred came back for the WGR roast. He had former teammates there, and some of whom you could tell the affection and the regard they had for him. People like Aaron Williams, much younger than Fred Jackson. Fred became almost a surrogate older brother to him. They called each other brothers. Eric Wood, Ryan Fitzpatrick flies here from Florida to come back and celebrate Fred Jackson and help roast Fred Jackson. He was beloved in that locker room by kind of several different categories of players, you know, several different ages of players, right? Young guys, old guys, they all really were drawn to Fred because of his story and because of his approach, I think.
I would say the friendship and the camaraderie that impressed me the most was the one between him and Marshawn Lynch. Because for a guy that is competing at your position and is producing, I mean, let's not kid ourselves, for a guy that's playing the same position, is producing, for them to get along in the fashion that they did, and really worked as a tandem together. Granted, Marshawn still got the bulk of the work when he was here, but those two guys ran for 1,500 and over 500 yards collectively. They accumulated over 2,000 yards on the ground. I can't remember the season. I want to say it was 07 or 08, but just to see how well they got along. I mean, Marshawn was kind of a cryptic personality. And not everybody could crack the facade that was Marshawn Lynch. There's still some people today that can't figure him out.
Right.
And to see how quickly Fred engendered himself to Marshawn and how they were, like, tied at the hip. They had nicknames for each other. I mean, Marshawn called him Head because he thought his head was unusually large. Instead of Fred, he called him Head. I found that one to be the most interesting friendship of the whole group, and I think it said more about Fred than it did about Marshawn. If you can engender yourself to Marshawn, who I think has very little trust for anybody unless you're in his complete inner circle and you've known him since he was six, I think that's a pretty impressive relationship to have with a guy who, you know, is not your normal breed of cat.
You know, and now you got me thinking about that, the relationship between Fred Jackson and Aaron Williams in later years, I found extremely interesting. Aaron Williams was a very talented player, second-round pick, who really wasn't up to snuff this first year or two. You know, position change involved in that. I don't think he was extremely mature when he first came here out of Texas. And I almost thought that Fred sort of adopted him and brought him along and taught him a little bit about what it meant to be a pro. The two, at the last couple of years where Fred was here, Aaron Williams and Fred were almost inseparable, really, when it came to hanging out, you know, off the field. You know, Aaron Williams would spend time at Fred Jackson's house all the time. Pretty impressive, I thought, on Fred Jackson's part to see a player in need, a talented player in need like Aaron Williams, just in need of some guidance and adopt him. A lot of reasons to like Fred Jackson. We can talk about that all day. And if you have any comments about Fred you'd like to share, he's going to be joining us today right around 2 o'clock after he signs the contract, the one-day contract to retire as a Bill. You can save your comments for then, or you can give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-5550. Chris Brown here until 3 o'clock today for the most part all afternoon long. A lot to talk about today, including the draft with Tony Pauline a little bit later on. Going to hear from Micah Hyde, Bill's safety, some of the comments he had yesterday. That's coming up later on in the show. We're going to hear from Nathan Peterman, I'm told, around 1 o'clock now, not 12:30, but 1 o'clock. And we also want to talk a little bit about the schedule, the news on the schedule. It is coming out tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. It'll be officially released on NFL.com, on NFL Network, and, of course, on BuffaloBills.com. Once the schedule is released at 8 p.m., it'll be up all over the website, right?
Right, and we'll dissect, you know, either A, some of the more interesting matchups or some of the more interesting quirks of the schedule, because inevitably there are two or three things that we pull out of the schedule and say, wow, that's going to be a tough stretch there, or this is rather unusual. For example, last year, the five division games in the last six weeks, you know, with Miami and New England, like both matchups with those two teams were crammed into the last 5 weeks. They had four division games in the last 5 weeks. So I think there will be elements of that throughout this schedule. And, you know, there's some history here too, you know, with some of the opponents they're going to be playing. Obviously, you know, the team has pulled players in, signed free agents from other destinations. So, you know, there'll be guys playing their former teammates and stuff like that. So, yeah, we'll dissect and dive into it all on BuffaloBills.com when the thing goes up.
You probably know by now who the Bills will play. You don't. What we find out tomorrow is when and where and how they line up. We want to get some thoughts from you on what you're looking for from the schedule. And again, you can do it on the telephone line. The line's open at 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. Regular season schedule for the Bills and the rest of the league coming out tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. We talked about a number of different questions, and we just want to know in general, what do you want to see from the Bills schedule? What are you looking for from the Buffalo Bills schedule? Who do you want them to open with? Do you want to see a primetime game? Home, away, who do you want them to play in primetime? Which opponent are you most looking forward to seeing here at home at New Era Field? We want to hear from you, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. It's not a Twitter poll because there's too many questions here, but in general, give us your thoughts. What are you looking for from the schedule? What would be the ideal schedule for you? And just so you know, and we have it, obviously we can present it on screen on the video side, but the home opponents for the Bills include the Dolphins, Patriots, Jets. Also, Jacksonville Jaguars are coming here this year. We don't know when when it is, or in what format, but Jacksonville is here, Tennessee's coming here, the Bears, the Lions, and the Los Angeles Chargers are coming here to Western New York. Bills make the 3 road trips, Dolphins, Patriots, Jets. They also go to Houston to play the Texans. They go to Indy to play the Colts. They'll play at the Packers and the Vikings in the NFC North, and they go to Baltimore to play the Ravens. So you have a sense of who they're playing, but what do you want to see out of the Bills schedule when it comes out tomorrow night at 8 o'clock? Phone lines open, 803-0550. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter at John Murphy Show. And Chris, some have suggested that a Bills opener against the Jaguars, the way Buffalo season ended last season in Jacksonville, a home opener against the Jaguars, maybe even a primetime game, might be a nice way to start. Look, I'm not going to try to make the argument that the Jacksonville Jaguars are a major rival for the Bills just yet, but could be getting there based on the playoff appearance, based on Doug Marrone's playing, coaching down there. That might be a nice way to start, to pick up this year where they left off last year.
Some recent history there. And,
yeah.
In the playoffs, both teams had long playoff absences. The Bills were 17 years. The Jags were 10 years. Both got back there. Jags obviously went a lot further than Buffalo did. But, you want a charged-up opener here. That could certainly do it. And you do have the Marrone angle to throw in with home fans. Is that the first crack they're going to get at him? I think it is, since he left.
Yeah.
The first time back in Buffalo.
He was here as an assistant before.
Yes.
Yes, but as a head coach.
Not
yes.
as a head coach.
Right.
So that just adds to it, I think, from a fan perspective. I think I'd prefer to see a primetime game here at New Era Field, maybe more than anything else. I just think there's an extra charge in the air, an extra electricity, if you will, not just because fans have had the opportunity to get sauced up for the game for an extra 5 or 6 hours.
Up.
But because
sauced up.
Just being, it's fact police here, Murph. That's all I'm doing. But I think that a primetime game just has that extra little bit of electricity to it, and I think that's great for you on your broadcast. I think it's great for the fans in the stands, and I think it's an extra charge for the players. I think you get better product on the field sometimes because guys are charged up to be under the lights. And so to see that at New Era Field, where unfortunately we don't get to see it a whole lot, would be a good thing. And if we can lead off the season with a Sunday night game, you want to start with a bang. Here we go.
And folks know this, but Sunday night is really the premier game now in the NFL schedule, more so than Monday night, right? Thursday night, everybody plays on Thursday. We know
yeah.
that. Monday night has taken a backseat now to Sunday night. Number one rated show on television, not just number one sports show. Number one rated show on TV, Sunday Night Football. And the Bills haven't been on Sunday Night Football in a long time, Chris. I'll look
especially
it up.
At home.
Yeah.
And the last one I can think of at home on a Sunday night, well, unfortunately, it may have been
That Patriots
56-10 game. But I still remember the 2000 season opener on a Sunday night when they played the Titans the year after home run throwback
right.
to talk about how the NFL has done this before. There is a history of them trying to match up two teams that may have squared off in the playoffs the year before, much like the Jaguars and Bills did this past season. You go back to that, and you've got the home run throwback game, and then the very next year, the season opener on Sunday Night Football was Bills-Titans here, which the Bills won 16-13, if memory serves. So I think that would be a juicy home opener. Face the Jags on a Sunday night, primetime atmosphere. I think it'd be a charged-up electric building here.
What do you think? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What would you like to see when the Bills schedule comes out tomorrow night, 8 p.m.? Primetime games, home, away, opponents you'd like to see here. Who are you looking forward to seeing? Do you need to have a primetime game? Maybe you don't. Who do you want them to open with? How do you want them to finish? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Michael on the line from Tonawanda. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air up first today.
Hey, Murph. Thanks for taking my call, man. I appreciate it.
Sure.
All right. Well, I would like to see the Bills play divisional games a little bit more spread out. It seems like we played a lot of divisional games really close together, especially at the end of the year. That's one. I would like to see a primetime game on the road this year. Possibly Green Bay or even Minnesota. Like those two games are going to be big for the Bills this year, I think. And the home, like in regards to the home games, I would think maybe what happened with Detroit? Why isn't there a Detroit preseason game this year? Any idea?
I think they just, the league does the preseason schedule as well, and I think they just decided to mix it up a little bit after all those years with Detroit. Did you hear anything else other than that, Chris?
No, I mean, I think it's the first time in a long time, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something like 11, 12 years since Detroit hasn't been part of the Buffalo preseason rotation. Some people often wondered if that was a favor to Mr. Wilson when he owned the team.
And because, Mr. Ford in Detroit, they were friends.
Yeah,
right?
They were friends. And, you know, obviously Mr. Wilson made his home still in Grosse Pointe, Michigan. So it was almost like a, hey, here's one for you kind of thing in the preseason, knowing every other summer he'd be able to watch his team in his home state. So I don't know if there was any validity to that, but it wouldn't shock me. I mean, you're talking preseason games. I mean, I guess that could have been an option. The thing I found most interesting about the caller's comments was spreading out the division games.
Yeah.
I welcome that as well.
Me too.
And the reason why is because you put so much into a division game. You know, guys can say what they want. They lay it out on the line every Sunday. I don't debate that. But for some reason, I think there's always something a little bit extra that goes into those division games because they mean so much, and the players know that. And oftentimes, when you're playing that hard and going that hard for the entire game, I can't prove this with statistics or anything, but you worry about an injury cropping up in one of those division games. You got to play another division team the next week. Now you're shorthanded. I'd kind of like to spread the division games out in case injury strikes at a critical position so you can rest that guy up and have him healthy again for the all-important next division game. When you're stacking them all in a row like that, you lose somebody important. Well, now it kind of hamstrings you. The next time you got to face a division opponent, knowing how important that division record is, you know, going into a division title race.
The Bills got through it last year, but I thought that was lame last year, the way you had one AFC East game in the first 8 weeks of the season, the opener against the Jets.
Yeah.
And then the next AFC East game you play is the Jets again, and that came in November, first week of November. And then you finish with four divisional games in the last 5 weeks.
Right. And I understand, and I think we all remember, too, that the league made a move to putting more division games at the end of the season because too often there were teams that were just throwing away games at the end when they didn't need them. They had a playoff spot clinched,
right,
and there weren't any division ramifications because they were playing an out-of-conference team in week 16 or 17, and so they had all their backups in the game, and they were sitting all their starters, and that, of course, tarnishes the product, and then fans are mad, the league looks bad, and so in the last probably handful of years now, Murph, we've seen more division games on the back end of the schedule, hoping that they mean a little bit more.
I like that.
To the outcome, but I think
that
last year was overkill.
Yeah.
Last year was overkill, four division games in the last 5 weeks. And the Bills weren't the only team. I think the Dolphins had a similar situation, obviously the two games against the Bills, but they had some other division games mixed in their last five games of the season too. And I can't remember. I think the Jets or maybe the Patriots had a similar circumstance. It wasn't quite as compressed, but in the last 6 weeks, I think they had at least three division games.
What are you looking for? The schedule comes out tomorrow night. What do you hope happens on the Bills schedule? The lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or on Twitter, at John Murphy Show. A couple of tweets. Matt Henry says, I'm going to Green Bay no matter when it is. Really excited for that game. I'm sure there are several NFL Bills fans here in Buffalo, who many of whom never been to Lambeau Field, look forward to that game to see their team playing at Lambeau. I get that. I understand there will be a lot of people at that game, Bills fans there.
It's hallowed ground as far as the NFL goes. And
does it feel like hallowed ground when you're there?
I know the first time that I went in 97, I was, I wouldn't say I was in awe, but I was kind of looking around like, this is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. And that was before the renovation.
Right.
The major renovation that they underwent, I think right around the turn of the century and maybe even a few years after that. But just looking at it in 97, I was just like, a lot of stuff has happened here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know.
That kind of thing.
I do
like
think
the ice bowl was here.
They
and
overplayed
that, you know, that kind of thing. So,
you know what? I lost my
Your sense of nostalgia for the league?
Yes. When the Bills, remember when the Bills went up there, I think, I can't remember who was coaching, but the Bills went up there and practiced for a week with Green Bay and then played a game there.
Yeah, that was in 05 we went up there.
05, so 13 years ago.
Yeah.
We spent the week there, hanging around Lambeau, hanging around the practice field.
Watching the guys ride the bikes down to practice.
By the end of that week, I was like, this is...
I'm good.
Okay, yeah, I get it. Lambeau's cool, but it's not that cool. By the end of that week, I was like, yeah, okay, Lambeau Field, I get it.
Yeah.
It's different. Look, I like it better than 99% of the other venues in the NFL, but really nothing special about that place.
Right.
The
they've got that museum now,
yeah,
right?
The museum and the atrium,
yeah.
But that's not in the stadium. The stadium is pretty bare bones, pretty basic.
Right, and believe it or not, they've improved it.
Yeah, yeah.
To a great degree. You know, they kind of put some extra stands on top, a larger press box, all those things. And, you know, I think it's better for the fans, too, there. I mean, it used to be the old-school bowl college kind of stadium, and I think they've modernized it to a certain degree. There are fewer bench seats in there and things of that nature. But, you know, you think about all the things that have happened there in the last 100 years or so, and I think if you have a firm working knowledge of the history of the NFL, there is a certain appreciation that you have when you walk in there. Even I remember one time pregame – during that 05 preseason when we were there for that preseason game at the end of the week.
Yeah.
It
wasn't even a game. It was a scrimmage, remember?
Was it a scrimmage?
Yeah, it was a scrimmage.
Between the Bills for some reason, that's
no,
right. Okay, it was
a
scrimmage. Yeah. So anyway, so with it being so loose, with it being a scrimmage, which they actually held in the stadium,
right.
I remember pregame, I got the opportunity to kind of walk through the locker room and then down through, you know, those archaic tunnels that come out from directly behind the goalposts. Very narrow. I mean, you think the tunnel for the Bills is narrow here at New Era Field.
No, it's like a two-person
tunnel. Oh, my gosh. It's shoulder to shoulder. Yeah. You're going down that thing. And it was just kind of interesting to walk down that same, you know, you're thinking to yourself, you know, Don Hutson walked down through this tunnel, you know, Bart Starr, you know, that kind of, you know, you're in the same place.
Yeah.
Who knows? You could be breathing the same air.
I get it. Here's an interesting tweet about the schedule. We're talking about the schedule, which comes out tomorrow. Scott Chisholm tweets in Sunday Night Football at home, please. That's what he's looking for.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Are you? Okay.
Oh yeah. I don't know. I just think there's something.
It is the marquee game of the
NFL schedule. And they don't.
Week.
We don't get too many of those here.
Oh, you're
we
right.
really don't. And
we haven't had them since Sunday Night Football has been the preeminent game.
Right.
In the league, and it is Sunday Night Football is the number one game every week.
Because they had, I think the last Sunday Night game here was 09 against the Browns, when unfortunately Lindell missed that 47-yarder at the end of the game. I think they lost by two. It was 29-27 or something like that. It actually turned out to be a very entertaining game between the Browns and the Bills. It was, you know, high scoring, relatively speaking, and it was back and forth. Battle of Lake Erie, I think they called it, and they had towels and everything. And I still remember the Bills-Cowboys Monday night game here. It ended in horrific fashion.
Yeah.
But just how charged up every was. I was doing the pregame radio show.
Is that what
out
you were
on...
thinking of when you said sauced up? The fans were sauced up a few minutes ago.
Well, maybe. But no, I was.
But this place was electric.
Oh, my God.
It was Monday night.
It was bonkers.
Yeah.
And I remembered I was doing the pregame radio out on Abbott Road, you know, under one of the makeshift tents that they've got out there. And people were going nuts. Like, you could barely hear us on the air because people were 10 deep behind the guardrail around our tent, screaming a bunch of stuff, some not even suitable for air, so they had to turn it down. I mean, it was loud, and they had those horns that the soccer fans all have, the vuvuzelas were blowing those. It was crazy.
We're talking about the schedule. What are you looking to get out of the 2018 Bills schedule when it comes out tomorrow at 8? Give us a call, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Here's an interesting tweet. I don't know if I'm buying it. T-Manny22 says, I think Goodell holds it against Terry Pegula for not working on a new stadium sooner. Because of this, don't count on a primetime Sunday or Monday game at New Era.
Yeah. I don't think that
don't
really
think
has
so.
Anything to do with it.
I don't either.
I don't think there's any tie there. I think they're just looking for the best possible matchups. Obviously, there are a slew of conflicts. There was a write-up, I want to say it was last year or the year before, and I can't remember who it was. I want to say it was someone affiliated with, you know, the Monday Morning Quarterback columns that come out during the week. Comprehensive look from top to bottom as to how those guys on Park Avenue at the NFL offices put the schedule together and all the conflicts that arise or stadium dates that don't work. Like, you know, they might want to put the Packers and the Vikings, you know, on a Saturday, on a Sunday night, and oh well, there's a concert, you know, at Lambeau Sunday afternoon. We can't do it. We got to move it. There's all these little logistical issues that pop up and crop up, and they have to scrap things and rework it. And I mean, believe me, they got computers working on it too.
Well, and I know there are logistics, but to me, I believe this has been the case for 10 years now. The number one consideration when they make the schedule is television ratings.
Right.
What will this matchup mean? Who do we owe this, you know, and they use computers because they have metrics, they have numbers.
Yep.
Packers versus Bills will probably get a rating about this. Do we want that rating on Fox? Do we, you know, well, we're going to the Packers. Do we want that rating on CBS? Do you want it on NBC Sunday night? Do you want it on ESPN? Those, I think, are the big considerations, the television ratings. What do these matchups, what can we expect the numbers that will be produced out of this, and how do we, you know, satisfy our network partners? That's what I think they do.
Right. And for the Bills, for a team that, you know, had not been to the playoffs in a lot of years, now they've made the playoffs, how do you apply a metric to them? They probably do a historical metric, 9-17 that made the wild card.
Yeah.
You know, what ratings do they pull down the following
small
year in the first quarter of the season,
right,
or the second quarter of the season? You know, from a smaller, you know, television market. And they slice it 1,000 different ways. And as I understand it, they actually have 4 or 5 completed schedules for the entire league. And then I guess they weed it down to 2, and then they double check for conflicts.
Yeah.
And then they pick one, and then that's the schedule. So it really is. I mean, I think they have 5 or 7 people working on it with a slew of computers.
And they've been working on it for months.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, oh, yeah, you know what? We got to get around to that schedule. What is it? It's April 1st. Yeah, we better get cracking. No. It's like they've been working on that since, like, right after Christmas.
It's mostly the TV matchups. All right, Chris Brown is here. We'll continue this discussion when we come back. You're welcome to join us. What are you looking to get out of the Bills 2018 schedule? What do you want to see? Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Chris Brown in today for who? Who are you in for? I don't even know anymore. Are you in for Donald Jones? Are you in for Steve Tasker? I don't know.
I am a pinch hitter for no one.
We are in a weird transition week here at One Bills Drive on the show. Next Monday, we start One Bills Live at One Bills Drive. Steve Tasker will be here. It's funny. I asked Andrew Peters said to me in the little changeover, Tasker on the show today? And I said, no, he's off until Friday. And, of course, Andrew's like, geez, he just started. How's he get vacation already? Well, he hasn't officially started yet till Monday. He's kind of pitching in. But Chris is here for the next 3 hours. We got the Fred Jackson one-day retirement coming up next hour, about an hour from now. We'll have Fred Jackson up here in studio. Going to have Nathan Peterman, we believe, around 1 o'clock today on the show. We're going to talk about the draft with Tony Pauline. In the meantime, we're talking about the schedule. Comes out tomorrow night. And what are you looking for from the Bills schedule? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Jeremy on the line from Colesville, New York. Hello, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Hello, John.
Hi.
Chris, how are you?
Good.
As far as the schedule, I'd like to see a Thanksgiving Day game in Detroit.
That is on the table.
Yeah.
That could be on the table.
I wouldn't mind that.
And any of the warm weather teams coming here in late November, December, like the Chargers and obviously the Dolphins.
Yeah. Texans, dome team maybe coming here. Or no, that's at Houston, my bad.
Short week.
What's that?
Short week. It's playing a Thursday night. Here on Sundays, or us go there Sundays.
Yeah. All right, good one. Thanksgiving. Did you go to that Bills game on Thanksgiving Day at Detroit? It had to be 15 years ago, Chris. Do you remember that?
I had to have been there.
Yeah.
I don't remember it at all. I don't know why.
It wasn't bad. And I think about that every once in a while. And when we get the opportunity to have that potential game, First of all, it wasn't bad because it was Detroit, and we were home at dinner on Thanksgiving Day by, you know, 6, 7 o'clock. That's not bad.
Right, short flight.
Yeah, 12:30 kickoff typically, maybe even earlier than that. Very short flight, and, you know, there's an effort made to get out of there. Secondly, it's a big game. It's a big national game. It's, you know that the whole country is watching. You feel as if it's an important game because it is Thanksgiving. I wouldn't mind that at all if the Bills had to play on Thanksgiving Day down there. Plus, you know, it's a Thursday game. It could give you, obviously, a short week going in, but maybe a little bit longer week coming out, or it would be a longer week.
Yeah, but now that I'm looking at it, I don't think that's an option because Detroit's here.
What are we talking about?
Yeah, Detroit's
here. Detroit is here.
So not an option this year.
Okay, sorry.
So your wish is not granted, and it will not happen. So I know my wife's probably happy about that.
I got to fix my schedule here. Let's go to Mark calling from Jersey City. Hello, Mark. Welcome. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, John and Chris. The thing, I like the schedule, but I don't like it. And the thing I don't like about it is everybody starts assigning wins and losses right away without knowing, you know, that arguably for this franchise, the biggest decision in a long time looms in a week.
Right.
So they're going to start, you know, assigning wins and losses to games that are 5 months out. And that becomes irritating. But when it comes to the draft and these guys assigning, they kind of take sides, these national heads. I shared something Benjamin Albright saying about, and I know Chris hates this thing, maxed out and ceiling. The criticism against Rosen is his ceiling, and he's maxed out. It's not his attitude, and I just find that to be terribly, terribly flawed stance.
Yeah, talking about the quarterbacks. Yeah, I mean, look, Rosen, I think, is the most pro-ready package. And because he's the most pro-ready, he has been knocked for having the lowest ceiling. Well, I think that's a foolish assumption to make, just because the other players have more perceived room to grow doesn't mean Rosen doesn't have room to grow as well. I think if you look at a player like, you know, Aaron Rodgers, who is considered insanely accurate as a player, I think he's gotten better with other aspects of his game since he's been in the starting lineup for the Packers. You make the same argument about Baker Mayfield. Well, he's the most accurate guy, I think, top to bottom in the draft. And can he not get better with his accuracy? I mean, it doesn't compute for me, because I think everybody can get better at different aspects of their game, no matter how good they are walking into the league the day they're drafted. So, yeah, there are certain opinions out there that kind of make me scratch my head, but I guess that's nothing new for pre-draft season.
Talking about the schedule as well, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550.
What did you think about that previous caller's comment, though, about the warm weather teams coming here? Do you put any stock in that when
you
got to play in December here and stuff like that? I mean,
very little.
If it's a game like the Colts game, I suppose that could have an issue, but that would have an issue on everybody, including the Bills players.
I do think the Dolphins packed it in early here late last year, warm weather team. In December.
Okay.
I got the sense that they just weren't up to it. But that doesn't happen often, I don't think.
No. I think the Chargers could be a candidate for that, though. Not necessarily every player on that roster. I think Philip Rivers would play in a hurricane.
I think what would hurt the Chargers coming here, what will hurt them, is the length of the trip.
Travel.
You know? Yeah. And the early start. If it's a 1 o'clock game, it's a 10 o'clock game for them.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what Anthony Lynn does with that, knowing he is playing a couple of East Coast teams this year. Because I don't think he had too many of those. I don't think the Chargers had too many of those on the schedule last year. Does he travel on Friday and take an extra day coming east? Because I do believe it's harder to come west to east than go east to west. Because you're picking up time going out there. You have more time to adjust yourself. Whereas coming east, just switching that body clock to play at 10 a.m., I think that's a tough road to hoe.
You know how we're interested in the schedule? You may be as well. And if you are, give us a call. The Bills schedule comes out tomorrow night. If you were a West Coast team, though, don't you think the schedule would have more meaning in terms of when are we traveling? Can we put any of these trips together back-to-back? When are we playing 10 a.m. games? I think if you were a West Coast team, you would even be more tuned into what the schedule looks like, what it means, and how it lays out, you know, 1 through 16.
Well, I mean, especially if you know you're playing like AFC East
yeah.
and NFC Central, and you're going to spend a good portion of your time in the Eastern time zone. I mean, that's at least 4 games in the Eastern time zone that you're going to have. Do you want them back-to-back so you can stay out there? Or are you a proponent of having your players sleeping in their own beds, being in their usual routine, and then taking just one extra day to do travel. There's a lot of different ways that coaches have sliced it over the years. I mean, I remember when Harbaugh was coaching in the league in San Francisco, he spent a whole week between Cincinnati and I think he had Cincinnati-Baltimore back-to-back, and he spent the whole week in Columbus, Ohio, between the Cincinnati game and the Baltimore game, and then flew from Columbus to Baltimore that Friday or Saturday to get into Baltimore. But they spent the whole week in Ohio.
Arizona Cardinals do it. I think they spent a week, is it last season or maybe two seasons ago, a week at Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, in between East Coast games.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. Yeah. And the last time the Bills did that was 2012 when Chan Gailey was the coach, and they did San Francisco and then flew right after the game down to Arizona. And then everybody stayed the week in Arizona, and then they played the Cardinals.
Schedule, what do you think? What are you looking for? We'll take a break, talk more about that. Anything else that might be on your mind? Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Chris Brown with us. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Chris Brown co-hosting today. We got the Fred Jackson one-day retirement coming up next hour. We got Nathan Peterman stopping by next hour. We're going to talk about the draft with Tony Pauline next hour as well. Right now we're talking about the schedule that comes out tomorrow night. What are you looking for from the Bills schedule? Who do you want them to open with? Do you want a primetime game, home or away? Which game is most intriguing to you? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. A couple of tweets on this. Sean Piantowski says, give us Jacksonville at New Era Field on Sunday night. Chris Pearson tweets in, I want a Bills home game against New England or away against Green Bay primetime Sunday or Monday night, not Thursday. One more. Here's another one. Joe Mazur, Bills will open with New England primetime against Oakland. And opponent most looking forward to see, Jacksonville. Chris, you've already done a little research into what this schedule, we don't know times, dates yet, but you know who they're playing. We know who they're playing. How does this Bills schedule stack up in terms of last year's one-loss records?
So one-loss record-wise, believe it or not, the opponents in 2017 that the Bills will face in 2018 had a losing record collectively, 127 and 129. So in terms of strength of schedule, and I know this is very arbitrary and probably not accurate knowing how much rosters turn over from one year to the next, but it's the 18th toughest schedule based on opponent record right now in the league. So below the middle of the pack, you know, how much have some of these teams improved? Well, I guess that's up for debate, and we'll probably know even more after next week when, you know, teams pull in their hauls from the draft. But you've got playoff teams that you've got to face, you know, one of them being Tennessee, one of them being Jacksonville, New England obviously twice, and then Minnesota. So you've got five games against playoff teams, which isn't a lot. I think there, I want to say there were more last year against playoff teams from the previous season than this coming season. So I guess you could take that as an encouraging sign. But as we've often found out, you know, once you get past week two or three, you quickly find out, oh, this team's a whole lot better than we thought they were going to be.
Or a whole lot worse.
Or you get to the second half. How about the Chiefs? I mean, that team got shot out of a cannon in the beginning of the year. Yeah. They were 5-1 or something, and then, you know, they tailed off by the, and were going through a rough patch by the time the Bills faced them, and then they beat them there in Kansas City last year. So it's such a – well, we talk about it all the time. It's a week-to-week league. So, you know, I don't know how much we want to put stock in some of these numbers, but I guess the fact that they were completely below 500 collectively last year is, I mean, I guess you
that's
don't
positive.
I guess you don't feel like you're facing world beaters every week.
Yeah, you know, we had an earlier caller on the show talk about that, how he dislikes the fact that people will immediately, as soon as the schedule comes out tomorrow night, start picking wins and losses. I think that's a natural reaction to seeing the schedule. I'll do it. You'll probably do it. You know, you go win.
Well, but it's human nature. Yeah, I mean, you got to do it.
I don't have a problem with that. But how much do you think the lineup of games impacts the win-loss record? For instance, you look at a schedule, you look at the way, you know, last year's schedule backloaded with all those division games. That got everybody's attention. You start picking which games they can win, which ones they might have a tough time with. Or even you look at the last year's schedule with that midseason road trip. I mean, there was I've got to find it here, but it was tough in the middle of the season last year. Well, there it is.
Saints,
yeah.
Chargers.
Yeah. Well, it went. Yeah, first you had the Jets on Thursday night. Then they came home and played the Saints. And then you went to L.A. Then you went to Kansas City. And you look at that on paper well before the season, you're like, wow, that's a tough. And then you finish on the road at New England, at Miami. But how much do you think the order of games impacts, when it's all said and done, wins and losses?
I think it
how
has.
Much of a factor is
it? Well, it depends on how it's stacked. I mean, there were some teams last year, I remember, they had three road games in the first month of the season. Three of their first four games on the road. I mean, that's tough, man. You're trying to get off to a fast start.
Yeah.
If you're,
well, like, some of that, like the Dolphins got screwed up by the storm.
Right.
In South Florida.
Yeah, and they had to scrap their week one game. But, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, Miami got off to a 1-3 start. I think week one they were at Seattle. Week two they were at Atlanta. And then they had a home game against, like, a pretty tough AFC opponent, like Pittsburgh or somebody. And then they started a division game after that. But they were on the road again. And you start a team three out of the first 4 weeks on the road, yeah, I think that is going to impact your record, especially if you're coming in under a new head coach. You're trying to get your feet under you, get adapted to your systems. Now you're playing in a hostile environment. On top of it, three of the first 4 weeks, you're trying to get all your ducks in a row and play at game speed with a whole host of new players around you in a new scheme. I think it can impact a team's overall record, especially at the beginning of the season. If you get thrust into a bunch of road games early, that's got to hurt. It makes it a lot tougher, I think.
Road games late, I don't think, work. I think it's a benefit to play at home in December. Now, the Bills may have put that to the test last year. They had a lot of home games, actually, the last couple of years in December. Certainly, he's not popular with people to buy tickets. But
right.
I think home games late help teams, don't you?
I think they can if there's a lot on the line. You know, if you've put yourself in position for the postseason, you certainly would welcome having home games late, because any advantage you can have to continue to create separation between you and your next closest pursuers for a playoff spot, yeah, you're going to want every advantage you can get. And playing at home is an advantage. I don't think any NFL head coach would deny that for a second. And, you know, the whole Thursday night thing, and, you know, I know you and I are going to butt heads on this, but coming off a short rest, I think you get to the second half of the schedule, if you're coming off short rest because you played a Thursday night game and you got to come back the next week and play, you know, 5 days later on a Thursday night, and we're talking week 12, 13, that's tough on the body. I mean, it's tough to do that in the first month of the season. Now, throw 12 games on a player's body and then tell them they got to go play 5 days later after playing on a Sunday, and you got to do it against a division opponent? Man, I don't know if that's even fair, especially if that division opponent is coming off a bye or something like that. So I hope we don't see any of those instances. The league has gotten better at cleaning some of those things up, because I remember back in 2014, the Bills had the most games off a short rest facing opponents that were coming off byes. Between byes and coming off short rest, I think they had six games where they had either an opponent coming off a bye and extra rest, or they were coming off short rest, and it really stacks the deck, in my opinion.
I wonder if, and it's impossible to know, maybe we can ask him next time we get Sean McDermott in here. I wonder if the first thing a head coach, any head coach, looks at is, when are we playing Thursday? What are we doing before it and after it? It might be the most important consideration for a head coach when the schedule comes out.
And you know, the league expanded the Thursday night schedule to between weeks 2 and 15. I think they got to cut it off at week 10. I really do. I know they value the prime time, and I think they just sold the Thursday night package for even more money last year. And so I get it. It's a moneymaker, but I think the product gets really watered down just because the bodies can't recover that quickly. And if you get to those Thursday night games come week 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, a lot of times those are dog games. They are not NFL-caliber football games, because the guys just can't summon up the strength, effort, and endurance to get through the game and play it at an intensity level that I think NFL fans have come to expect from the players. And I think it's harder on them. I know the league will put it out there that no more injuries occur on Thursday night games than they do, you know, on Saturday, Sunday, or Monday nights. But I think you get to the second half of the season and there is so much wear and tear on the bodies already, to then have them go out and play a game on short rest, I don't want to say it puts him at risk, but I think it certainly affects the product overall.
Here's an interesting tweet. Chad Edwards, we're talking about the schedule, which comes out tomorrow night. What do you want to see of the Bills' schedule? Chad Edwards says, I want to see a Sunday night game. Take one away from the five they give the Steelers every year. Give one to the Bills.
Well, Yeah, I get where he's coming from. But when you're a team that is perennially contending, you know, for an AFC conference title or even appearing in a Super Bowl, or you're deemed as one of the teams to beat in the conference, you're going to get those primetime games all the time because they know they're going to draw ratings. You know, TV sticks with the front runners.
We can't kid ourselves about that. Sunday night's going to be named quarterbacks typically. Yeah. That's how the Steelers wind up there, and that's how the Cowboys wind up there because they are the Cowboys, and the Patriots wind up there in Sunday Night Football. I'll be interested to see if the Bills crack the Sunday night lineup this year.
And if you look at the Bills' list of opponents, really the only teams that you would anticipate getting more than one primetime matchup this season, I think you'd say Minnesota, Green Bay because of Aaron Rodgers, maybe Jacksonville because they got all the way to the AFC title game, and New England. I mean, those are the teams that you can probably bank on getting 2 to 3 primetime games through the course of the season. And then maybe the Bills are one of their opponents in those 2 or 3 primetime games. That's how it's probably coming to fruition.
All right, we got a break here. We got a good hour coming up next. I think it's going to be pretty good. I hope so. Tony Pauline will
be a little more confident here, Murph.
I feel
good
about it. Chris is going to be with us. Tony Pauline will join us to talk about the draft. And at 1:30, we will show you live, and you can hear live, Fred Jackson's retirement, one-day retirement plan, and then Fred's coming by at 2 o'clock. Come on back to John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills players are wrapping up their day 3 of off-season conditioning. Off-season conditioning began on Monday for the Bills. It'll continue again tomorrow, and then Bills will get Friday off. Fred Jackson will retire today as a Buffalo Bill, a one-day retirement engineered by Jackson, former Bills running back, four-time captain, played over 100 games for the Buffalo Bills over the years, first player in NFL history with 1,000 rushing yards and 1,000 kickoff return yards in one season. That happened in 2009. We will carry Fred Jackson's retirement ceremony live for you here on the show. The Bills wrapping up their 30 pre-draft visitors today, the final day that they can come in, and the Bills scheduled to host Maryland wide receiver DJ Moore today, according to reports. He's coming off a season in which he caught 80 passes for 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns for the Maryland Terrapins. NFL schedule comes out tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. The schedule will be announced at 8 p.m. on NFL Network and simultaneously announced on BuffaloBills.com at 8 p.m. tomorrow. Tom Brady, according to sources, has yet to commit to playing in 2018, believe it or not. No official word from Brady, either privately or publicly, has left some to admit that while they think it will play, they cannot say for sure. We'll talk about that in a moment. And in hockey, the Vegas Golden Knights last night became the first franchise in NHL history to sweep a postseason series in its inaugural season when they beat the L.A. Kings 1-0. They won the series. The Golden Knights will face the winner of the San Jose-Anaheim series. In the next round, San Jose leads that series 3-0. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy here. Chris Brown is here joining us today, filling in today. And Chris is going to bolt in a couple of minutes and head upstairs for the Fred Jackson retirement. We will carry that live for you. And then maybe you can head to Foxborough for the Tom Brady retirement announcement, Chris. Do you believe this?
I'd go see that.
I watched this on ESPN today. A breathless Adam Schefter, who's great, does a great job, saying that there's no official word from Brady. People believe that he's coming back for the season, but he still has not committed to playing in 2018. I just can't believe this is a thing. He's going to play?
Do you honestly
walk in the other room and ask how many of the players on the field for the Bills have committed to playing in 2018? They're here.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Do we honestly believe, knowing the competitor that Tom Brady is, that he's going to go out as a loser in the Super Bowl? Do we honestly think that's how he's going to ride off into the sunset? I don't care how much Giselle is in his ear. This guy is coming back and he's playing. There's no way his last game is going to be a loss in the Super Bowl. No way.
I don't know. Does he have to issue a commitment? Okay, he hasn't been there for the voluntary offseason workout yet. Is he required to commit? I'm playing this year. Is that what we need to see? I don't think so. He's Tom Brady.
You may now, but
I guess now you do.
But from what I've read from some of the Boston area columnists, is this is not unprecedented. He missed some time during the voluntary portion of the off-season conditioning program in 07, in 08, and in 2010. So there are three other off-seasons where he has not reported day one of the voluntary off-season conditioning program and then eventually made his way in and got ready for the season. So, you know, he's where is he? Over in Qatar or something I saw? Yeah. I mean, he's...
What do you make of what's come out of the Patriots? You know, Gronkowski hasn't committed yet. Gronkowski hasn't showed up yet. Here's Brady.
I don't know if he's coming back.
Former Patriots talking about how they're sick of Belichick and the way he runs things. I just can't take it seriously yet. I won't believe anything until we see who lines up and plays for the Patriots.
It's interesting, and I think the reason why people are following it even more closely now than maybe they would have a few months ago is because of that ESPN piece by Seth Wickersham when he gave strong indication that there was a rift in the brass, you know, Belichick, Kraft, and Brady, and how there was a rift there or some kind of disagreement that had tarnished the lockstep way in which those three have operated over the years, and some of it centered around Brady's personal trainer who has a facility in the mall area around Gillette Stadium, and it went from there. And anything that involves the Patriots is going to be blown to high heaven just because of the team they have been for the better part of the last 18 years. So I think that's why it's getting the traction that it is now. And it's almost, I think sometimes it almost gets to a point where reasonable people don't apply logic to the situation and what's being reported.
Yeah.
And because as soon as I saw that, the first thing I said to myself is, are we recognizing at all the kind of competitor that Tom Brady is?
Yeah.
I mean, he would box out his son for a rebound in a one-on-one basketball game and knock him clean off the court. I mean, that's the competitor you're dealing with here.
Yeah.
There is no way Tom Brady, who genuinely cares about his legacy, I believe, is going to make his last NFL game be a loss in the Super Bowl. That is not – it's not happening.
I don't think so. We'll see. Hey, we're talking about the schedule today. The schedule comes out tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Want to know from you, who do you want the Bills to open with this year? Do you want them to play in a primetime game? If so, home or away? And which opponent are you most looking forward to seeing this year? Give us a call. We got lines open, 803-0550 locally. Outside Buffalo, it's toll-free call, 1-888-550-2550. Chris is going to head upstairs in a couple of minutes for the Fred Jackson retirement announcement. We will carry that live. Tony Pauline from DraftScout.com will join us in a couple of minutes as well to talk about the draft. And we've got callers on the line who want to talk about the draft and what else? They want to talk about quarterbacks. Shock. Ron in Buffalo. Go ahead, Ron. You're on the air.
Hey, I was actually contacted and curious about your guys' ideas of taking Jackson at 12, Rudolph at 22, use the rest of the draft to fill some holes. Worst case scenario, you got trade bait with McCarron or the other guys if they're good.
Seems like overkill to me, Ron. I mean, make up your mind, you know, if you're the Bills, make up your mind. Which quarterback do you like and do your best to get him? Why two? Why two in the first round?
I might be hard to get up. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh.
You have to give up a lot as well. I mean,
So get two to play him here or to have some trade material? What are you thinking?
Well, I mean, obviously it's hit or miss, you know, with the quarterback in the first round.
It's hit or miss with every single player in the draft, too.
That's why if you take two, you got a better chance of them being a better player.
Same goes for linebackers and corners, too. Go ahead, Chris.
It's funny because I think early in the pre-draft process, every Bills fan under the sun was largely saying, do whatever you got to do, go up and get the guy. And there's been this increasing alternative approach that I'm hearing more and more on talk radio, you know, here in Buffalo, which is, man, that's a lot to give up. Don't we want to hold on to those picks and plug some holes? And maybe we just stay where we are and take who's left. And to me, that's settling.
Yeah.
And I think if there's ever a position where you shouldn't settle, it's quarterback.
Yeah.
If you've got a guy that you are convinced is the guy, or you've got even two guys that you would be over the moon to have at the quarterback position, I think you move heaven and earth to make it happen. And I'm pretty confident just in the stuff that I've heard from Brandon Bean the last couple of weeks. And yes, he's probably issuing that word of caution, but I got to believe behind the scenes, this guy is trying his darndest to find multiple solutions to put the Bills in a position to get one of the guys that they feel is franchise caliber at the position. And to settle for less, I think, that's not to say that it can't happen. I mean, as he even said earlier in the week, you need a dance partner.
Yeah.
And if someone is not willing, then it's a whole lot harder to make it happen. And perfect example can be the Giants at 2. You know, I firmly believe that if the Browns take Josh Allen number one, the Giants are sitting right there and they're probably taking Sam Darnold, because word out of New York is Darnold is the only quarterback that the Giants would consider at 2. It's the guy that they like the best. So whatever Cleveland does at 1 is going to largely impact whether or not a quarterback's coming off the board at pick 2, with the Giants staying put and doing that. And we all know there are multiple scenarios that could unfold in the top 5 picks. It really is a fascinating draft, not only because of the quarterbacks, but because of how certain teams are positioned and what they feel they need and what they're willing to part with in exchange for an enormous amount of draft capital. Who knows, maybe a player or two. There's just so many dynamics at work here at the very, very top of the draft with some of the most recognizable names in the draft pool. It's not going to shock me, Murph, if this is one of the highest rated NFL draft broadcasts,
Yeah. Maybe
ever, because there is so much uncertainty with so many quote-unquote surefire quarterbacks, you know, in a draft pool that's maybe more than usual. I just think it's going to be fascinating. And I think it has the potential to be completely off the chain with teams jockeying for position come draft night, if not shortly before.
And it feels like the Bills are in the middle of that a little bit, right?
I would think so.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's all this buzz this week. Bucky Brooks, you know, the NFL.com draft analyst, is talking about how he's hearing about a 3-team trade, which you rarely see in the NFL. And he said it would completely throw the order in the top 5 into upheaval in terms of where it currently sits now. And he says, I'm not mentioning any teams. He goes, that's as far as I'm going, but something could be in the works that is blockbuster in proportions. Now, again, that if he's talking top 5, maybe that's Denver making a giant move up to the top, and maybe Cleveland slides back 1 to go to 2, and maybe the Giants move back to 5, where they can still get a top 5 non-quarterback, heck, probably top 3 or top 2 player. If the first two picks are going to be QBs, and the Jets probably going to be a QB at 3, you're still going to get one of the top 2 non-quarterbacks in the draft at 5 if you're the Giants. So you wonder if those are like the 3 teams involved, Browns, Giants, and Broncos. But we're all just speculating on what it could be, but I think that's what makes this thing so intriguing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Let's take one more call. Let's go to Kevin in Alabama. Kevin, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. How y'all doing?
Good.
Hey, I want to talk about A.J. McCarron. I wanted to get, first of all, your opinion on what you think about him coming to the Bills, and then kind of give you my take on watching him play at Alabama and what I see in him.
I'm glad he came to the Bills, especially once they traded Tyrod Taylor. I think he provides an option for them at quarterback, but I don't think I want to put all my faith in A.J. McCarron as the answer when they look for a franchise quarterback. I'm glad he's here. I think he could wind up as a starter on opening day here, but I don't know. I haven't seen enough from him to indicate that he has a chance to be the option as the franchise quarterback. What do you think?
I think that's the issue for me, too. I need to see more. And, I mean, even in the NFL, we barely got to see him. He's got 4 starts in his career. I think he's appeared in 11 games in 4 years. And we're talking spot duty. We're not talking 60, 70 snaps. You know, coming in a blowout loss, coming in a blowout win. I'm not going to deny that he's got NFL ability. I think he's got that. The question is effectiveness. And how effective can he be? I can't answer that question. I haven't seen enough of him to know definitively whether he can or he can't. I suppose, you know, people in the pro personnel departments have a better handle because they've watched every snap on tape that this guy's put on film. But I haven't. So for me, it's the jury's out.
Yeah. What can you tell us, Kevin? What do you want to tell us about him?
Well, a couple of things as far as his NFL experience. You know, you talk about spot duty. Well, when he had those games at the end of the season when the Bengals were trying to qualify for the playoffs, he played really well, coming in really cold when you think about it. And then he essentially had the game won against the Steelers and just a moron defense that made some ridiculous plays on the last drive and lost the game. So it would have been their first playoff win and who knows when.
Yeah, Jeremy Hill fumbled too.
The playoff game.
Yeah, Jeremy Hill fumbled too. So.
Right. Well, one thing you're going to see about A.J. McCarron is the Bills are going to be so much better off with him on the team, and here's why. Number one, this guy will over-prepare for everything. He learned it at Alabama. He did it there. You know, some may say he even overachieved a little bit, but just with his, you know, he's not a fast guy. He's not going to out-jump people, outrun people, but he is smart and he's good and he's thorough and he's going to study every defense that he comes up against. And the other thing is, whoever the Bills draft at quarterback will have to work their tail off to beat the guy. And that is going to make the Bills better off in the long run.
All right, thanks. Interesting to hear. Hey, Chris Brown, we want to cut you loose. You got to go upstairs to the other side of the building, catch up with Fred Jackson. We'll go live to Chris coming up in about 15 minutes or so as he goes with Fred Jackson. Fred Jackson getting set to retire as a Buffalo Bill. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, no problem.
Chris will be back on the show. And joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline to talk about the draft, some of the issues we've talked about, is the draft analyst for the NFL draft analyst for draftanalyst.com. Happy to have Tony Pauline on the line with us. Tony, John Murphy here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, you caught, I think, so that was the tail end of our last caller. There is a chunk of Bills fandom here, Tony, who think the price is going to be too high for the Bills to move up, stay with what they have, Nathan Peterman and A.J. McCarron. Can you tell me what you think of that strategy and maybe, because people don't listen to me, tell people what the difference is between McCarron and maybe one of these potential franchise-changing quarterbacks that come out in the draft this year?
People don't listen to me too much, honestly. So we're in the same boat. I mean, there were people who were not happy with Andy Dalton in Cincinnati. So A.J. McCarron, I mean, if he was really a franchise-level or starting-level quarterback, probably could have snatched that job away from Andy Dalton. That is what some people feel. I don't know about that. You know, it depends. What is the price? We don't know what the price is yet. I mean, if the Bills really feel that one of these top quarterbacks is going to be their guy. They've got a host of picks from some of the trades that they made. You know, it's worth it. You've got to look at it. Can you say that was it worth the price for what the Philadelphia Eagles traded away to move up to get Carson Wentz? Was it worth the price for what the Rams traded away to move up and get Jared Goff? You know, it's more than just trading for a quarterback. It's making sure you have the pieces in place in the coaching staff to then develop that talent. That is what people tend to miss on. So, you know, I think if the Bills feel it's the right move, then you got to go for it.
When you look at the price, how much are you influenced by what has already gone on in this year's draft? In particular, you know, the move made by the Jets a couple of weeks ago. How much should that influence whatever price the Bills have to pay to move up?
What's going to influence it is what the demand is for that pick. You know, are there other teams that want to move up for that pick? You know, the other factor is going to be how motivated are the Giants to move down. Do the Giants want one of the quarterbacks, or do they want Saquon Barkley? I reported a week ago that there is a blueprint in place for that trade between the Bills and the Giants to happen. In fact, I've been told that basically there is an agreement in principle for the compensation for that trade to happen. Doesn't necessarily mean that the trade is going to happen. You got to see if the Giants basically want to sit there and see what other offers they receive, or are they that high on a guy like Saquon Barkley or one of the quarterbacks? So it's a supply and demand sort of situation. It's not so much that the Jets kind of set the bar, and they set the bar pretty high for just moving up three slots, but if no one else wants to move up to number two and the Giants want to trade down, you know, then the parameters or the price is not going to be that high.
I was going to ask you about that agreement in principle you reported on. Two-part question. Any idea what's involved in that agreement as far as the cost? I mean, are we talking about next year's draft as well, as many people think, number one? And number two, how does that get effectuated on draft night? And do they wait until draft night to make that happen, do you think?
To answer your second question, yes. I don't think it's going to be a pre-draft move, because I think it's a situation where the Giants may work the phones up until the last minute and then decide, do they want to hold on to that pick to take one of the quarterbacks or Saquon Barkley. As far as what the price is going to be, I mean, the Bills have two first-round picks in this year's draft, and they've got a couple of second-day picks, so I'm sure it's going to be a combination of those two things.
Tony Pauline on the line with us, host of the Draft Analyst Podcast. He is the draft analyst writer for draftanalyst.com. Tony, let's talk about these quarterbacks. In your most recent mock draft, you have the Browns at one, going with Josh Allen, a pick that I think some people consider risky. Why do you think Cleveland would go that way?
Well, because of the upside potential. I mean, you know, you look at Cleveland, it's a bad weather city. Allen's got the arm strength to make all the throws at the next level. He's a tremendous athlete. He's got great size. He's got incredible upside potential. And to his credit, you know, he's shown a lot of improvement in his mechanics since the Senior Bowl. I mean, we're at the Senior Bowl, and I know you were there. I heard him speak, and he was getting a little bit irritated by people saying that, you know, you had to improve your accuracy. It was the footwork. And he knew he had to do that, and he's done that. He was good at the combine. He was better at his pro day. Now, throwing in shorts and a T-shirt are completely different from throwing in full pads, as the Browns did with E.J. Manuel. But still, he's a smart guy. He did well on the Wunderlich. You know, he's not a wild quarterback. He's not a wild passer. When you watch his misses, they're usually a little bit high of the mark, or they're zipping behind the guy. He's not all over the place, and he's shown the ability in the past, 2016, to be on the mark with this throw. So I think the things with Josh Allen are very fixable. I go back to what I said before. You know, everybody gets all crazy when they select a guy. It's just a name on the piece of paper. You have to have the proper coaches in place to develop that talent.
Does Cleveland have that kind of coaching staff right now, or is that something that maybe would happen down the road?
Yeah, I'm not sure about it right now, but I think Cleveland with John Dorsey is in a unique position, and that the fact is if the coach doesn't do well, he may be gone before the season's even over. I believe they kept him on primarily because of salary reasons. So I think it's a situation where, if you're asking me, no, they don't have the coaching staff in place right now. It may be 2018.
Tony, you got quarterbacks going in, what, four of the first five picks in your most recent mock draft, including Josh Rosen going to the Broncos at five, and you've got Baker Mayfield going to the Jets at three, the Giants going with Sam Darnold. What does that leave for the Buffalo Bills if they don't make a move up the draft board? What will they be looking at if they sit there at 12?
Well, if you read my analysis for the pick for the Giants, I said it's going to be the Giants, or it could potentially be a trade-up by the Buffalo Bills.
Right.
I mean, what does it leave? I think it leaves Lamar Jackson with that second pick in round one, that additional pick, if they decide to go with Lamar Jackson. People say, well, you just traded away Tyrod Taylor. Why are you going to bring Lamar Jackson in? I think Jackson's got a bit of a better upside. He's got a stronger arm. I think he could more adapt to an NFL-type system, but you know, what does it leave him? It really leaves him with the fifth-best quarterback in the draft.
And Darnold is the second-best quarterback, you would think, if he goes second in the draft?
Right now I have Darnold behind both Josh Rosen and Josh Allen. I think Josh Rosen, who could eventually be the fourth quarterback taken, as far as I'm concerned, is the most NFL-ready. He's the prettiest passer. He's got the best mechanics. He's the most accurate. He's the guy who, compared to the top four, consistently places his throws where only his receiver can make the reception. His personality rubs some people the wrong way. His medicals may basically red flag him for a number of teams. The arm, the shoulder injury that kept him on the sidelines for most of 2016, the concussions at the end of last year. He's a guy that if you bring him in, sort of like McCarron when you were talking about before, you better protect him because he's not a real mobile or elusive guy. But as far as a picture-perfect NFL-ready passer, Rosen's number one on my board.
Hey, Tony, so much focus on these quarterbacks this year in this year's draft. My partner out here, Chris Brown, was saying a couple of moments ago, this draft is likely to be the most viewed NFL draft of all time, maybe because of the quarterback intrigue. Does it merit that? Is this draft class of quarterbacks better than most? How does it compare to last year, or how does it compare to some of the all-time great draft classes in quarterback?
The way I view this NFL draft class is this. It's got great upside, but it's got an equal amount of downside risk. It's got a lot of bust potential. Basically, I was more excited about this quarterback class back in September of 2017 than I am in April of 2018. And the reason is none of these guys really progressed. I mean, Josh Allen did not show great progression in his accuracy. Sam Darnold was making many of the same mistakes with his reads, with his ball security. Josh Rosen had injury issues, although they were concussion issues, not shoulder issues. And Baker Mayfield is what he is. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he's an electrifying college quarterback who looked like a magician on the field on Saturday. And I just don't know that it transitions all that well to Sunday football. You know, in the day and age of social media, you know, this is going to be the greatest quarterback class until potentially three of the four guys don't pan out, then everybody will forget about it.
8 days away until the draft, Tony. You've got your most recent mock draft went up yesterday. One more to come, another mock draft before the names start coming off the board, or is that it for you?
Absolutely. One next weekend because, you know, you put up the mock draft and then you get more information about right. what the Dallas Cowboys may do, what this team may do, you know, and then maybe a trade happens. But we'll definitely have at least one next weekend, maybe a final one the Wednesday before the draft.
We'll be looking for those. Thank you very much, Tony, at draftanalyst.com. We appreciate it. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks for having me.
Tony Pauline, draft analyst, the draft analyst writer for draftanalyst.com. His mock draft went up yesterday. He's got the Bills. Well, he does mention the Bills might get to two, might get Sam Darnold. If they don't, he's got him going for tackle Mike McGlinchey of Notre Dame at 12, and then the quarterback Lamar Jackson at number 22. Tony joined us live on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. When we come back, Fred Jackson's ready to sign the papers and officially retire as a Buffalo Bill. We will carry it live when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Chris Brown standing in, standing by up in the office, the other side of the building here, as Fred Jackson gets set to sign his contract, retiring after a one-day signing with the Bills, retiring officially as a Buffalo Bill. And then Fred will be joining us as the show moves along sometime, probably around 2 o'clock or so. We'll stick around for that. But we're going to get the signing live for you here on both the TV side, on MSG, and on the radio side on WGR, just coming up in a moment or two. In the meantime, we've talked a lot about the draft, obviously, with Tony Pauline. Interesting thoughts from him. He's got Cleveland number one overall going with Josh Allen. And he presents the arguments for Josh Allen that, you know, we've reiterated on the show. And we did the poll, the Twitter poll, what was it, last week? Who's the one quarterback you do not want the Bills to take? And it was pretty serious that it was Josh Allen, the Wyoming quarterback. For some reason, he engenders a lot of negativity among the fan base. Maybe it's just here in Buffalo. People look at the low completion percentage and figure, no, not him. There are upsides apparent, too, for impartial observers who look at Josh Allen. Look, he wouldn't be my first quarterback chosen. Darnold would, but I can see why teams like him. Big, strong, big arm, especially important in places like Cleveland and Buffalo. Appears to be a good kid who has got his head on straight and a guy who might be a difference maker at quarterback. But some people feel like he's the last one they want. Well, again, he said, Tony Pauline said in his mock draft that he would be the guy. Josh Allen would be the Cleveland's number one pick in his latest mock. Maybe that changes. All right, draft aside, time to check in with Chris Brown, Bills insider Chris Brown, who is on the other side of the building here at One Bills Drive getting set for the big announcement on Fred Jackson. Chris, take it away.
Welcome, listeners, on the John Murphy Show and all of you on Facebook Live that are tuning in. I'm here with Fred Jackson at One Bills Drive. Big day for him as he returns and signs a one-day contract to retire a Buffalo Bill. Fred, first of all, congratulations. Second, where did the impetus for this start? Because I know talking to you yesterday a little bit, there was a groundswell of support from the fan base to maybe do this.
That's just it. You know, I've always made it known that I wanted to retire a Bill, and to hear from the fan base that they would like me to do that as well is something that meant a lot to me. And I've been blessed enough to have, you know, Jim Overdorf and Brandon Bean, you know, both give it their blessing. So we made it happen, and I'm happy to be here.
Is this about as full circle as it can come for an NFL career?
I can't ask for a better situation to be in, you know, coming in here and signing this one-day contract to be a Buffalo Bill again.
Do you remember the time back in 2006 when you signed, probably not very far from this location, you know, way back in 06?
I do.
Remember what that day was like?
It was. It was one of those days that, you know, outside of my kids being born, it was one of the most happiest moments of my life. So to be able to come back in and do it again full circle, you know, have this opportunity to sit down and sign a contract again is one of those things that, you know, like I said, outside of my kids being born and being, you know, getting married and things like that, this is one of the happiest days I've been a part of.
Well, Fred, thanks very much for giving us some of your time and some time to the fans, as you always do. I think it's time to do the honors here and get this one-day contract rolling.
So Fred Jackson sits down at the table upstairs in the executive offices to sign his one-day contract to retire as a Buffalo Bill. And you heard, and there's general manager Brandon Bean and head coach Sean McDermott behind him. They will shake his hand and congratulate him. Neither one of them had a chance to coach Fred Jackson, but certainly they understand his place on the team and his where he stands historically and what Fred Jackson means, mostly to the fan base, I think. One of the all-time most popular Buffalo Bills, I would say. Fred Jackson is going to be joining us in studio here coming up in about 25 minutes to talk a little bit more about what this means. As you heard him talk with Chris Brown and talk a little bit more about what it means for him to sign his contract today, his one-day contract, and retire officially as a Buffalo Bill. Let's take a few phone calls. Let's go to Dale calling from North Rose. Dale, you're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hey, John. How you doing today?
Good.
Hey, when you think about Buffalo, I think they're just doing a lot of smoke screen. I don't believe they're looking to get a trade up yet, the quarterback, get rid of a lot of draft picks.
Why do you say that?
Because Sean McDermott and them have belief in the A.J. McCarron because he's a better quarterback than Tyrod was. And the only way I think they'll trade up, if they're probably licking their chops to hoping that the first four will take quarterbacks, then they'll trade up and get in ahead of Indy to get Chubbs. And if Chubbs is gone, I think they're going to stay right there and get the linebacker or the defensive back.
What do you think they have been doing for almost a year now in terms of collecting draft capital? Don't you think they were at least interested in moving up to get a quarterback by the trades they've made, the moves they've made?
I mean, everyone's talking about Josh Allen and people like that, but, yeah, he has a strong arm. But if you sit there and watch tape on him like that, I mean, yeah, just because you got a strong arm and big hands, I mean, he's not even accurate. I mean, you throw the ball so many yards, I mean – you're not going to, you know, I mean, how many times you throw with the ball 70 yards down the field?
Right. All right, thanks. Here's a call from Tom in West Seneca. Go ahead, Tom. You're on the air.
John, thanks a lot for having me. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
My choice for the first game at home against the New England Patriots, and I think from that point on we have a good barometer as to where we're going for the rest of the season. Also, I'd like to comment about Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott on the show yesterday. I thought that Brandon Bean made it very clear that they want a franchise quarterback. And I believe it was last week on the 9th, you had a gentleman named Teddy Lehman.
Yeah.
And if anybody could make a better case to Teddy Lehman, I'd like to see him.
He was talking about Sam Darnold, I believe, right? USC.
Pardon me?
Wasn't he talking about USC, Sam Darnold? That's why we got Teddy Lehman on?
No, he was talking. He made a great case for Baker Mayfield, which was my guy.
Okay, Baker Mayfield.
He even came out.
It was Baker, you're right.
Phenomenal case for Baker.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, we lost you. Thanks. Let's go to Ben in Niagara Falls. Hi, Ben. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I wanted to say thank you to Fred Jackson for his service and for retiring as a Buffalo Bill. I loved him. He was one of the most effortless runners I've ever seen, and it was beautiful to watch, and he will be missed. The other thing was I just wanted to play devil's advocate, because I know when you have callers say that, you know, to get a quarterback, you know, they're hit and miss, and then I hear you say something to the effect of, well, yeah, so is everybody else. My thing is that everybody else isn't going to cost all of our picks in the first two, if not more, rounds. And I guess that's all I had to say.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's the price, right? It's the cost of what it would be to move up that has people, you know, looking at it hard. And it should be looked at hard. And look, I believe that Brandon Bean, as much as I believe that he has tried to set this team up since last year, and even before him, McDermott, to be in position to draft a franchise quarterback next week, as much as they've done that, I believe that they have the cost in mind too. It's the cost that makes people pause. And I think if the cost is too much for Bean and or McDermott, they will pause and will not make the move. But you're right. Yeah, a quarterback to make the move up would cost a steep price. That's what you got to look at. My point is there are no guarantees in the first round or any of the rounds. And so I think when you've got a quarterback class that is pretty good, as this one appears to be, and you've got as much draft capital as the Bills have, you got to look at it. You got to look at it hard. And they need a franchise quarterback. They have for more than a decade now. And I think this could be the year to get it done. If you have a conviction on one guy being the right guy, and if you have an opportunity to do it, and you're willing to pay the price, and the price really is the biggest question right now, 8 days before the draft. Ron on the line from Dunkirk. Hi, Ron. Go ahead.
Hey, long-time listener, big-time fan. I think we should sit at 12. You know, I think it's football. I don't think, you know, we talk about quarterbacks so much. I don't think you guys realize football's a game of inches. Quentin Nelson's the guy. We need him. You got to protect your investment. No point in taking a quarterback unless you can protect him. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, okay, but what investment? Who are you worried about protecting if you don't get a quarterback? I agree. Quentin Nelson, outstanding offensive lineman, one of the best offensive linemen, maybe the best offensive lineman this year coming out in the draft. And if you have a franchise quarterback that you've invested in, you're right, you do have to protect him. Bills don't have that quarterback yet, so who are you trying to protect? I mean, not that McCarron and Peterman don't need protection, but you got to protect your investment. But first you have to invest in the investment, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Here's John in Buffalo. Welcome, John. You're on the air.
Hey, Murphy. I'm sure that this has been brought up before. Rather than go up and give up all your capital, why don't they just think of moving from 12 to 7 or 8, somewhere around there, and go for Roquan Smith?
I like Roquan Smith a lot.
That would be terrific, because you go for a quarterback in the second round, just give up, maybe you'd be giving up your 12 and maybe a second rounder. I don't know, moving up four spots, how expensive that would be.
I don't either.
What do you say?
I'd rather get a quarterback, and I like Roquan Smith a lot, but I'd rather have a chance at a franchise quarterback here. That could change. All right, we're going to take a break. Chris Brown rejoins us when we return. The John Murphy Show, coming to you from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. We're live at One Bills Drive. This is live radio, ladies and gentlemen, and television simultaneously. So
sure,
stuff happens. Chris Brown is back after going upstairs for the Fred Jackson Poof. Retirement announcement. That's pretty amazing. Live stuff going on here on the show today. We're kind of trying to keep up. How was it up there, Chris?
It was a packed room. Like, you couldn't see, for our MSG viewers, you couldn't see on camera, but I mean, you saw head coach Sean McDermott and GM Brandon Bean come in after, congratulate him, take a couple of pictures. But Kyle Williams is in the back of the room.
That'd be nice to see.
A couple other people. Pat Coletta is here, former Sabre, who's a close friend of Fred's. He's here to see the signing.
That would have been nice to see.
You know, his wife Danielle's here, of course. His agent's here, Shane. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of people cramming into the back of that conference room. So opposite of me, there was probably about 15, 20 people on the other side of the room.
That would have been nice to see. Coolest thing we saw was that cool touch video screen behind you.
Oh, you like that?
Yeah, I've never seen that before.
Yeah, it was a good graphic. Thank you, Fred. It was good.
Fred seemed good, seemed the same, huh? Seemed
yeah, happy. I think, you know, and I talked to him at length yesterday when he was putting together the piece that we have on BuffaloBills.com. Fred Jackson, thank you, Buffalo. He's at peace with this decision. Because if you remember, he was really wrestling with whether his career was over or not after that one season with the Seahawks.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's almost as if he did not want to accept the fact that he was 35, pushing 36, and that the phone probably wasn't going to ring. And he said, after spending a full off season and then a full regular season with my family, seeing my kids compete in sports and do all those things and spend a ton of time with them when I hadn't in the previous 10 years, and the fact that I turned 37 and realized there's some things at 37 that you just can't do anymore, you know, he said, I now am at peace with what my NFL career is. And I think 10 years is far beyond what anybody anticipated, especially knowing he didn't get his crack in the league until he was 26 years old, which for a running back, I mean, think about that. Arguably, you're three quarters of the way through your career.
At age 26. The other thing about Fred that's worth noting, and we're going to get Fred on the air with us in the 2 o'clock hour, we believe. We'll see if that happens. The other thing worth noting is that not only was his departure from the league not seamless, his departure from the Bills was much less than seamless, and in fact, he was not happy when he left here. Wasn't happy about the way it came out. That's why I think it's important to bury all that, to sign that contract, to be a Buffalo Bill for one more day, I think is important for Fred Jackson. And I get that.
Yeah.
I get why he'd want to do that.
And I think just being within earshot of Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean, when they were just talking to him upstairs, they basically told him, you know, don't be a stranger. Yeah. You know, you want to come around, you're always welcome here. And I think Coach McDermott, who was always looking for that little bit of inspiration, whether it's a guest speaker on a Saturday night before a Sunday game or something like that, I think Fred is a perfect candidate for something like that. And you got to believe in Coach McDermott's mind, those wheels are turning. This is a person that I might be able to use as an asset somewhere down the road because he's the ultimate success story for an underdog. And, you know, maybe he's got a game, maybe he's got a playoff matchup where the Bills are humongous underdogs. Who better to come in and rally the troops than Fred Jackson on a Saturday night speech before a game?
Yesterday we got into a discussion, Steve Tasker and I, about Fred Jackson as a candidate for the Bills Wall of Fame. I think he's a no-brainer. I think he's a lock. Steve, you know, wasn't ready to say that. I almost pushed Steve off the chair right there yesterday. Is he not a lock for the Bills Wall of Fame based on he's a third all-time rusher in franchise history, his popularity among the fan base? We've talked about that a lot today.
Right.
How could he not be on the Wall of Fame?
Yeah, I mean, after Jim Kelly and maybe Daryl Talley, I don't know if there's somebody that personifies what Buffalo is more than Fred Jackson. Maybe Kyle Williams is probably on that list too, but you want to talk about players who embodied what the city meant or what the city, what the city's image is? I mean, he personifies it to a T.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically Jim Kelly, Daryl Talley, and it's probably Fred Jackson and Kyle Williams next on the list, don't you think?
In terms of
the way they played the game, that alone should put you on the Bills Wall of Fame. Then you go into, you know, all his career accolades, which let's face facts here. We're talking about a guy who, while he probably deserved to start at least two or three or four of the years he was in a Bills uniform, he did not. Probably maybe because of politics more than anything else, and the draft position in which players like Marshawn Lynch and C.J. Spiller were drafted was not afforded a full opportunity to be a starting running back unless one of them was hurt. And, you know, I think what he accomplished in the time that he was on the field was pretty impressive. So I think he's unquestionably a candidate for the Wall of Fame, unquestionably.
And he's a lock. Hold the vote today. I'll vote for him right away. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Your thoughts on any of this? Fred Jackson, schedule comes out tomorrow. I want to know what you think about that. What are you looking for in the schedule? The draft, maybe you want to talk about that. I get a kick out of this tweet just came in from Donaldus Magnus. He tweets in, there seems to be a high number of clueless idiots calling your show today. Come on now.
Wow, talk about a blanket statement.
The Bills are 20-plus years and running without a franchise quarterback. People would rather fill holes.
Oh, yeah.
There are always holes. To those fearing to trade up, get a clue and get the darn quarterback. There is a weird dynamic among some fans. I don't think everybody's there. And it is fear, Chris. It is fear of making a mistake on the quarterback question. And I think you have to shut that out. Make your decision. Who's the best quarterback for us? Can we get him? Does he fit here? Can we get him? What would it cost? Those are the considerations. Don't worry about, the guy might be a bust. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Is it hugely important to get it right? No question.
Yeah.
You want to get it right. You think Brandon Bean doesn't want to get it right? He wants to nail this thing. But you can't let fear consume the courage of your convictions. Because if you do that, you're not going to accomplish anything. I mean, this is a high-risk business.
Yeah.
And the draft is as arbitrary as maybe anything out there in professional sports. And you've got to just do the best work you can, be as thorough as you can, gather as much information as you can, and then whittle it all down into a defined decision that you're comfortable with and you can live with, whether it's right or it's wrong. And I think that's the approach that, in large part, 32 general managers take. I thought John Elway nailed it at the combine when he was asked, do you worry about the misses? Because they, let's face it, you want to talk about misses at quarterback,
yeah,
the Broncos organization has had it. Whether you're talking Tim Tebow, Brock Osweiler, fourth-round pick, granted. Who's the other first-round quarterback that they drafted?
Paxton Lynch, yeah.
I think there's three, and I'm drawing a blank on the third one. So they got three misses there. And he said, I don't worry about the misses. Got to keep firing. And I think that was the same approach he took as a quarterback. You know, I'm not going to complete every pass. I'm going to probably throw some picks, but that's not going to keep me from throwing the football. You can't live in fear. You'll never accomplish anything.
Call here from Ted in Amherst. Go ahead, Ted. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I just want to say it's pretty much a no-brainer as far as what Brandon Bean has got to do. You take the quarterbacks, the four or the six, you put them in the order of which guys you like the best, and then you trade up as far as you can, and whoever's left, you take that guy who's next on the list. And forget Lamar Jackson, because we just traded him away. He doesn't fit our system.
The only thing I would say, Ted, and I would ask you this, do you need to have a list of names six deep? I mean, that seems deep. That seems like a lot. How about three or four that you could live with?
Well, if we don't trade up, then, you know, maybe we get a guy at 12, you know? That other guy besides Lamar Jackson?
Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe get him in the second round, I guess, is what I'm saying.
He's not going to last till round two, I don't think.
He could last till 22.
Maybe.
What if he doesn't? Yeah. You know, then everyone's going to go crazy because we didn't get a quarterback. You know what I mean?
So, are they? I don't know. I hear callers to the show all the time saying, don't worry about getting a quarterback. Fill the holes on your roster. I don't know if everybody's going to go crazy.
Well, what did you just say? A bunch of idiots calling in today.
I didn't say that. I didn't call them idiots. No, whoa. A tweeter called, a guy who tweeted the show called them idiots. Not idiots. I understand people have that. I disagree. I disagree pretty strongly with that approach, but I understand that people have that. I think it's fear, as Chris pointed out. It's fear of making a mistake. You might make a mistake. You might get the wrong guy. That's called the NFL draft, I think.
Got to swing for the fences.
The chances. You got to.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks. Thanks, Ted. Thanks for your call. We got a break coming up here. Fred Jackson standing by to join us soon. Come on back for that. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
Got the update from One Bills Drive. The Bills have wrapped up their workout day three of the off-season conditioning program with more than 50 Buffalo Bills on hand. The third day of this first week of the off-season program has ended for the Bills. Meantime, in the Bills' executive offices, a little bit of business today, Fred Jackson signed a contract and is ready to retire now officially as a Buffalo Bill. He does so as part of the Bills. A four-time team captain, played over 100 games for the Bills, and played his final season in 2015 with the Seattle Seahawks. He ends his NFL career third on the Bills' all-time rushing list, behind only Thurman Thomas and O.J. Simpson. Fred Jackson standing by to join us live here on the show momentarily. Today is the last day that pre-draft visitors can appear here at One Bills Drive, and the Bills reportedly have wide receiver D.J. Moore from Maryland in town today, coming off a season in which he caught 80 passes for 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns for the Terps. 3 seasons at Maryland, Moore with a total of 146 catches for 17 touchdowns. NFL schedule comes out on Thursday, announced at 8 p.m. Thursday night on NFL Network. It will also be announced on our website at buffalobills.com. Buffalo Bills and the rest of the league waiting for the release of the schedule. Some intrigue apparently around Tom Brady and his future in New England. ESPN reports that Brady still has not committed to playing in 2018, but people who know him believe he will be back for the upcoming season, according to ESPN. The lack of any official word from Brady, either privately or publicly, has left some to admit that while they think he will play in 2018, they cannot say for sure. There are also questions about the future of Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski. And from hockey, the Las Vegas Golden Knights advance in the Stanley Cup playoffs becoming the first franchise in NHL history to sweep a postseason series in its inaugural season. They beat the LA Kings last night 1-0. The Knights now face the winner of the Sharks-Ducks series in the next round. San Jose leads that series 3-0. As we said, the news here at One Bills Drive, much of it today deals with former running back Fred Jackson, who has signed a contract and now retires as a Buffalo Bill. John Murphy, Chris Brown here in our One Buffalo studio. Happy to have Fred Jackson with us. Hello, Fred. Welcome back. How are you?
Thanks, Murphy. I appreciate that. I'm doing well.
Right now, are you a Buffalo Bill, or did you retire? I mean, did you retire? Did you sign, and then you signed something else to retire? How does this work?
I wish we had a game today, because I am officially a Buffalo Bill, man. I could go out on the field.
And when does that end?
Today.
It starts and ends today.
Yep, starts and ends today.
Do they have any jobs for you, anything they want you to do? Anything. I mean, you're under contract.
I'm going to talk to Sean as soon as I get off of this and see what I can figure out.
I was telling him it's a shame you've missed the off-season conditioning workout today. You'd be out there pushing sleds and stuff.
You know I would. I'd be out there, you know, diving right in to do everything.
Tell me, Chris asked you this a couple of moments ago when you signed, but what got this rolling? What made you think you wanted to come back and do this, sign a contract and be a Buffalo Bill?
I mean, just the support that I got from the fans. You know, whenever I was around or wherever a fan, you know, came up to me, one of the things they would say to me is, when are you going to sign that one-day contract as a Buffalo Bill? And, you know, it was something that I always wanted to do. And had the opportunity to talk to the guys upstairs, and they said, yeah, we can make it happen. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, okay, it's a done deal. I'm going to sign that one-day contract. And, you know, I wanted to do it when it was best for everybody. You know, right now is easy. You know, I don't want to distract from what's going on with the team during the season. And to be able to do it right now and then go into the draft is something that I wanted to do.
Got Fred Jackson in the studio for a couple of minutes. If you have a comment or a question for Fred, give us a call. We got phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You said you heard it from fans a lot about signing the one-day contract. You have always been a guy who listens to the fans, and they feel they can approach you, right? I mean, that's one of the hallmarks of your Buffalo Bills career.
Yeah, you know, I think we have to accept who drives our game, and that's the fans. You know, without them, we don't have this game. So one of the things I wanted to do was, you know, let them know that I was a guy that was very approachable and that I played hard for them. You know, it was easy to go out and compete for fans that came up to you and let you know how much they appreciated you playing and the way you played made it easy for me to go out there and compete for them.
There's a part of me that, you know, just watching you along with Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean talking there after, you know, you sign your contract, they come over, congratulate you, kind of welcome you back to One Bills Drive. You know, I even heard Brandon say, you're welcome anytime you want to come around. And then my wheels are turning in my head. Sean McDermott's got to be thinking there's going to be a game where they are pitted as a major underdog. And they're going to need somebody to come in and talk on Saturday night before the game. And I'm thinking he's already got Fred on that list to come in and talk to the team. I mean, you know, I know you majored in youth counseling, right, in college and stuff. Yep. And getting in front of people has never been an issue for you. Do you could you find yourself comfortable in that kind of a seat if asked?
Oh, yeah.
You know, to kind of pump a team up the night before a game?
Yeah. It would be, you know, not only would I find myself comfortable in it, you know, it would be something I would love to do. You know, especially if guys that you walk in that room and they respect you and what you have to say, you know, it makes it easy for you to, you know, come out and talk to guys and give them the knowledge that you've accumulated over your playing time. So it would be something that I would definitely be comfortable in doing. And I'm excited to see what these guys do next year as well.
Hey, Fred, you talked about the bond you have with the fans here. I wonder what you anticipated when you came here. It was almost this time of year, I want to think, in 06, right, when you first came here from Europe. What did you anticipate when you came here to Buffalo? You had Marv was here, the co-college connection, but beyond that, what did you know about Buffalo? What did you know about the Bills?
Not a lot. You know, the only thing that I knew about Buffalo was that they played the Cowboys twice in the Super Bowl. That was it. You know, after coming out here, you know, I didn't know much. You know, I knew it was going to be one of those things where I had to work at everything that I was going to get. And, you know, I knew that Marv was the GM, and he was a guy who told me if he had an opportunity, he was going to give me a look, and he gave me that look in NFL Europe. And when I got back over here, I was like, I want to make sure that I show him, you know, how much I'm appreciative of what he did for me. So I wanted to lay everything I had on the line for him, and, you know, I hope I did.
We had Kyle, you know, Kyle was upstairs, one of your former teammates, to witness this. We had Coletta's up there, who I know is a good buddy of yours. And Murph and I were talking about this earlier on the show. Just the way you build relationships with teammates seemed to come very easily to you. And I don't know why that bond just it never quits with you. The one that I told Murph, though, the one that impressed me the most was the one you had with Marshawn, because Marshawn is a cryptic character. He's not an easy guy to read, and he's not a guy to trust too many people either, for whatever reason. And you and him just seem to get along right from the jump. How did that relationship manifest itself so quickly with two guys competing at the same position? How did that all unfold and work so well so fast?
Oh, man. One of the things about Marshawn that, you know, I try and tell everybody is, you know, he determines what he thinks about you right away, you know, and he came in and had him over for dinner. You know, he met my wife, met my kids, and from that moment, we were just great friends. It worked so well just because I was never afraid to say to Marshawn what I was thinking at the time, and he knew that it was just me talking, you know, as somebody who cared for him.
Just being real.
Yeah. And that's the one thing about Marshawn is he likes real people, you know, and he does rub people the wrong way, but, you know, it's one of those things that I will always say that Marshawn is a great person because he is. He's one of the people that I can call and say, hey, I need this, and he's doing it, or he has somebody that can do it for me. So he is somebody that, you know, I would trust with my life, you know, because he knows he can trust me with his. If there's something I can do for him, I'm going to get it done. And our relationship just built because we told from the day he came in and the day he got here, he said, I want you to push me to be the best, you know, player that I can be. And in turn, I'm going to do the same for you. And anytime you get a teammate like that, you want to go out and do everything you can, you know, for them. And our relationship worked just because of that.
I know he had a nickname for you, which was Head, because he used to make fun of the size of your head. But did you have a nickname for him?
I had way too many nicknames for Marshawn.
Are they suitable for air?
They're not. We're not on Murph Show. I got to keep those off of Murph Show.
I got one other teammate, and similar observation that Chris made. I always admired the way you kind of adopted Aaron Williams later on in your career. Aaron came in, pretty high draft pick, second-round pick, went through a position change. I don't think he was happy when he first got here. And somehow you and he became like his older brother over the last few years of your tenure here. Yep. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I mean, Aaron's, just like you said, he's like a little brother, you know. And you see a guy that, you know, that in talking in the locker room that wants to do the right thing, that wants, you know, all of Buffalo to love him. And I say, you know what, man, just come hang out with me. I'll get you out in the community and see what it is you're playing for. You know, let these fans talk to you and tell you what it is that they love about your game, what they love about this game. And it makes it easy for you to play for him, you know. And after doing that for, you know, 2-3 weeks, you know, he bought into what was going on. All right, this is how I need to change, you know, what it is that I'm doing. And, you know, anytime you can do that for somebody and, you know they have the best intentions – it's so fulfilling. And you know, Aaron is another person. I talked to him just before I got here. You know, he couldn't be more proud that I was coming back to retire as a Buffalo Bill. So I think those relationships are what you take away from this game.
I think I was combing through just some of those historical notes on your career and such, and the one that always fascinated me was when Fred was still the full-time kick returner, but he also ran for 1,000 yards. So he had 1,000 kick return yards and 1,000 rushing yards in one season, and he was the first player in NFL history to do that.
He's done it since, by the way.
I don't think so either. But on top of that, he had about 500-something yards receiving. So at the end of the season, he had over 2,500 total yards from scrimmage, which was just like a stupid number. And I think there was one other guy that year that had numbers that were either close to that, or maybe there was one guy ahead of you or something. I can't remember if it was Forte or somebody like that. Did you ever – I mean, those are two numbers that are just stupid to put together in one season, just that many kick return yards and rushing yards.
Eric Wood had one of the best lines from the roast that I can't say, but it was a lot of fun to me. To me, I wanted to do as much as possible to help the team. And when Bobby April asked me to return kicks, I was all for it. It was something that I loved to do in college, got the opportunity to do it in the NFL. And when I first got here, Eric Studisville was, you know, one of my all-time favorite coaches, if not my all-time favorite coach, said, look, the more you can do, it's going to help you on a football team. So if they ask you to do something, you don't turn it down. And that's the way I felt about them. Whatever they asked me to do, I was going to do. And got a chance to do it that season.
And I was reminded of the time when you threw the touchdown pass to Lee Evans in the Tennessee game, which I think was also in 2009. But then I find out that you also rushed and caught a touchdown pass. So you're like only one of two guys in NFL history to run for one, throw for one, and catch one in the same game. Mm. What do you remember the rushing touchdown and the receiving touchdown at all? I remember the pass to Lee Evans. It's like a 37-yard pass. Yeah. And the Bills didn't even win the damn game. That was the worst part.
Right, here we go right here. Yeah, no, it's one of those things. I don't remember the rushing or the – that was my favorite play of that game. So that was the only one I remembered. And you're right, we didn't win the game. But I remember talking to Lee. He said, man, just put it up and I'll run under it. So he made it real easy for me to do.
With Fred Jackson, Bills running back, I don't have to say former today because you are officially
available. Yeah, that's right. He's taking up a roster spot today.
Let's take a few phone calls for Fred Jackson. Brad on the line from Rochester. Brad, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, John, Chris, and Freddie.
How are you?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry about that. Hey, guys. Hey, Freddie, congratulations, man. It's pretty cool seeing that happen today. You're always one of my favorites. That team that you were on with Fitz and Stevie and CJ and you – if this team even wins a Super Bowl in the future, some of my favorite players were on that team that played. I got a picture of you and Stevie coming off the field together in my man cave, man.
Thanks. I appreciate that. That was a lot of fun to be a part of that group. You know, we had some characters on that group, and we enjoyed ourselves out there on the football field, definitely.
A lot of hardworking players on that team, and it just didn't happen. And I wanted to see you guys play in the playoffs so bad, but it didn't happen. But, man, you guys were a lot of fun to watch, and I have a lot of respect for the players that were on that team. My question is this to you. Do you ever think about – getting into coaching, maybe being a running backs coach or something, and teaching these young guys how to stonewall linebackers coming in on a blitz? You ever thought about coaching in the future?
I have. You know, it's one of those things that it will be something that I look at down the road. Right now I got kids that are, like, taking up every ounce of my time. So, I try and tell people all the time, I'm more busy with them than I was when I was playing. So, it's something down the road that I will look at once I get them going in their whatever fields they may be getting into. Coaching is something that I definitely want to get into.
Thanks, Brad. Here's a call from Mary Ellen in Alden, New York. Go ahead, Mary Ellen. You're on the air with us.
Hi. Thank you, guys. Fred, I just want to say welcome home again. back over the years when you were a spokesperson for a local bank, every Christmas I'd get my four young grandchildren Bills jerseys. And one year, I got everybody 22s. Three of them said Jackson. One of them on the back said Freddie. And it was at a South Towns branch, and he just had to go see his idol. And so you took a wonderful picture with him, which I had since gotten autographed, and it's hanging on my personal wall of fame here in my family room. And, Fred, I have coffee with you every morning, and I'm so glad you're home. And for everything you've done for the Bills and for the community. And that's it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad that I was able to get those jerseys signed for those guys and you have it hanging up. And make sure I take my coffee when you have it with me in the morning, okay?
You hear these calls. I mean, it's just a small example. A small example of the wide swath, you know, that Fred kind of cut through this community. I mean, it wasn't just on the field on Sundays. You know, it was Tuesdays going to hospitals or, you know, making community appearances or being a spokesperson for somebody. And this is the result of that. I mean, yeah. here he is. His career, for the most part, is 2 years in the rearview mirror. But people don't forget that stuff. They just don't.
You want to hear more calls, I assume. Yeah, these calls are easy to take. Let's go to Rex in Tonawanda. Rex, hi, Rex. You're on the air with us. Oh, we lost him. Thanks very much. I got to ask you about what I'm tempted to say it's my favorite Fred Jackson play. And you know where I'm going with this. It's the opener at Chicago. Beautiful day on the lakeshore there. And the Bills and the Bears are close. And, you know, the game gets to overtime. That run was such an amazing run that set up the Bills for the game-winning score in that game. What do you recall about that play and about the reaction of your teammates and the entire team opening day in Chicago to make a play like that? What do you recall about that?
One of those things, linebacker shot the gap was all I saw. And I knew when he shot the gap next to him was open. And when he shot that, I bounced outside, and just like I thought, there was a seam. And I said, okay, you're going to be one-on-one with the safety now. And so you got to beat him. And Like a fool, he came in with his shoulders up high, and he gave me his chest, and I was able to make a play for us, and we were able to win the game. And one of the best things I remember about it is we were in Chicago, and I can hear, you know, in the stands, some Freddie chants.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was my family, but still, that was one of the most important things about that day, or the most vivid things about that day, was hearing Freddie chants in Chicago Stadium.
You almost hit the pylon on that, right? Yeah. Didn't you almost get the pylon there?
And that was another thing that made me mad, is I didn't score. I should have scored right there.
Yeah. Amazing play, and a great setup play for the victory on opening day. That's what got me. It was hot, right? It was a warm day.
It was.
And it was opening day. And that was a 9-win season that didn't result in the playoffs. But in many respects, I think that play kind of set up the rest of the season and whatever success you guys had that year.
It did. It was a lot of fun. And I think that was the first time we had won in Chicago in a while.
Yeah.
So, or maybe ever. But it was great to be a part of. You know. So it was one of those things that I said it all the time, and I try and tell young guys, you know, when your number's called, be ready to make a play because, you know, you're going to have that opportunity.
Call here from Jeff in Jamestown. Go ahead, Jeff. You're on the air with Fred Jackson.
Hey, Fred. This is Jeff. I wanted to ask you, if you hadn't gotten hurt in 2009, you were in the running for the offensive MVP. You think you would have made it?
I believe so. You know, it was one of those things that I hated. I think that was 2011, though.
Yeah.
2011. I hated that I got hurt. It was one of my best seasons that I was having, and to have it anytime you have an athlete or anybody hurt or taken out by injury, it's one of the worst feelings in the world.
The thing that chapped me about that more than anything was, I mean, at that point, Fred was a shoo-in for the Pro Bowl, and when the Bills put him on IR, as it was explained to me, he's no longer considered for coach and player voting for the Pro Bowl because mm-hmm. you're on IR, yeah. Which to me, that's backwards. And that's a rule that's got to be changed because I understand he's not going to be fit to play in the game, but you don't take away what the guy did on the field for the time that he was healthy.
Also, and you can't acknowledge his
exactly.
season. Yeah.
And he didn't go to the Pro Bowl that year. Yeah. I was chapped about that one. I didn't like that.
You and me both, Chris. You and me both.
Call here from John and Snyder. Go ahead, John. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Well, great to be here with Freddie on a great day like today. And I think, you know, all his accomplishments on the field are well documented, and everybody knows that. But I think it's other people have said this before, and I think I've been on the show once before talking about this, is some of the work he does that he did that went unnoticed. And, you know, I had a son who was having some transition problems from high school to college, and, you know, wasn't sure if he could do it. And I told him, I said, you know, you got to think of what Freddie would have done. And it made a little bit of sense when it came from me, but it made a lot of sense when it came from Freddie. So I met Fred on a plane, and I told him what was going on. I said, could you just write a little note saying, hey, you know, good luck, keep it up, don't give up. And he wrote me a beautiful note that I gave to my son that is still one of his prized possessions. And he's 24 now, lives in Cleveland, but when he comes home, his bedroom is like a shrine to Freddie. And a lot of it has to do with that note and the encouragement that he gave him that brought him to, you know, really great heights in his college career as a student and as a person, not as an athlete, but as a student and as a person. And really, it was something that, again, people don't notice it. It's just an act of kindness. It was between Freddie and myself that I gave to my son, and it made a huge difference in his life. And I always wanted to thank you for that, Freddie.
Oh, man. I remember exactly what you're talking about when we had that discussion on a plane. I was happy to do that. You know, anytime, you know, you can talk to somebody and give them some words of encouragement to push through whatever it is that they're facing in life, and, you know, you have the power to do that, I think you should always jump on that. And it meant a great deal that you asked me to do it and asked me to give him some encouragement. So I'm glad that, you know, I was able to help, and he still, you know, has a little shrine. You know, I got to see a picture of the shrine, so make sure you tweet that to me. But, you know, I was more than happy to do that, and I'm glad to hear that he took it to heart and became a wonderful person.
Mike in Niagara Falls on the air with us with Fred Jackson. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, guys. I'd like to just share a quick story. I think it's 2011. I'm waiting in line for about 3 hours. I have kids like 6'4", 2". The Bills went signing autographs, like I said, 3-4 hours. The long day. So I think we're one of the last to get our autographs. And my 6 and 4-year-old you know, get an autograph from Fred. And Freddie actually took the time to ask me questions about my two-year-old. I'm like, who does that? Guy's been signing autographs for 4 hours. He's tired. And here he is asking me questions. And, you know, one of my greatest moments, you know, I was, you know, been a long time season ticket holder, been a million games, you know, Super Bowl years. But probably my greatest memory of a Bills game when the Bills came back from 21-0 and Fred had that run, and me and my five-year-old son are chanting, Freddie, Freddie. And it's just amazing how many great players the Bills have had years, you know, Bruce Smith, Thurman Thomas, Jim Kelly. But I really think, I could be wrong, but I think Freddie's the most popular out of all of them. And it's a credit to Fred Jackson, of course.
Oh, man, that's a huge compliment, and I appreciate that. You know, and I know, I remember the autograph signing you were talking about. And one of the things I wanted everybody to know when I was sitting there doing those autographs is, look, I know you guys have been waiting here just as long as I have. So I wanted you to know that it was important for me that you guys stuck around for 4 hours. So I wanted you to know that by me showing you that I cared what your two-year-old was doing at the time, because I'm sure your two-year-old was like, man, what are we still doing here? I don't even know who this guy is. So we got to go. So, but I mean, it's like I said, it meant the world to me that you guys hung out that long.
Hey, Fred, we want to show you something on Twitter. Hall of Famer Andre Reed, Bills Hall of Famer, tweeted this out 9 minutes ago. Pictures, and he said, the world is right when players can retire with a team that feels like family. Fred Jackson started on the practice squad and played until 2014 on the Bills. Well-deserved. And he said, I got a new haircut in honor of your last day as Buffalo Bill.
That's Andre a Fred Reed. Jackson special.
Yeah, hey, man. Picture of Fred and Andre, and Andre got his hair cut.
Andre
like,
looks good.
Does look like
yeah, he looks good. He looks like he could be an older brother, really. So,
is that the term, fauxhawk? I thought it was frohawk.
There's two. Okay. His is actually a frohawk, not a fauxhawk, but okay. Don't tell him that, though. So, but he looks good. I think it's a haircut he needs to rock it for a while.
A couple of more calls for you, Fred, and we can do this all day, but we can't, actually. Michael calling from Buffalo. Go ahead, Michael. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, how you doing, John Murphy?
Good.
I like your show. Fred Jackson there?
Yes, right he's here.
Yeah, how you doing, Fred Jackson?
Not too bad. How you doing?
All right, I'm glad you're back in Buffalo. We need you.
Man, I appreciate
are you ready to step in, Fred?
Whenever you call me, I'll be ready.
Here's a call from Mary in Fredonia. Go ahead, Mary. You're on the air with us.
Hi, Fred. Thanks for taking my call. I want to thank you for coming back and retiring as a Bill. You're back where you belong. To watch when you played, and you have a great life, sir. Thank you for coming back.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the call, and it was real easy for me to come back with all the love and support that I got from all you guys, so thank you.
Fred, you were just back a couple of months ago for the roast, the WGR roast. This is a great day. That might have been the hardest I've laughed in years, though. That exceeded my expectations. I was there to introduce Fitz, who was ridiculously funny. Fitz took his pants off in front of the whole crowd. I still have to remind myself, right? I mean, he took his clothes off right in front of the whole crowd.
He did. And the beautiful thing about it, it exceeded my expectations, too. But the beautiful thing about it, I knew with the lineup we had, Fitz was going to be the one that took the cake.
He killed it.
He was
brought the house
great.
Down, huh?
Yeah, he was great. And for some reasons, obvious reasons, we can't show everything that happened, but it was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
It was a great night.
There was something special about that group too. I know, you know, people are going to look back at the records and say they didn't win a ton of games, but when you think about Fitz and Fred and Stevie being a seventh round pick, and there was a lot of guys that, I mean, even Donald Jones, I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of guys that had to scrape their way onto an NFL roster, and it was almost like there was a brotherhood within a brotherhood in that locker room. I know Stevie called them the goon squad, the receivers, and you know, I think Fitz used the misfits or whatever it was. And what did that do to the bond in there, you know, between you guys that all had to maybe do a little extra to get where you got?
Oh, man, it was one thing that definitely motivated us to play for each other. You know, we were guys that, you know, weren't necessarily supposed to be there, but we had an opportunity to go out and play well and play hard for each other. And when you can play for somebody else next to you that wasn't a first round draft pick or that had been on a few teams before they got there, you wanted to leave everything on the line for them. And we played hard for each other. We didn't win as many games as we would like to, but We had a lot of fun, and we competed for each other and played well, or played hard for each other when we got that chance.
We're going to ask you in a minute here what's next, but I wonder if this is might be a clue as to what's next. You just completed a week at NFL Broadcast Boot Camp, mm-hmm. right, at Bowling Green last
week? I did,
week,
yep.
2 weeks ago or last week?
Last week.
What was that like? What did you learn there?
It was a lot of fun. You know, we got to hang out with some of the best in the business at it. You know, I'm hanging out with some of the best in the business right now. But, you know, it was a lot of fun. You know, learning just a bunch of stuff behind the scenes. You guys are awesome at this, by the way. You know, learning some of the stuff that I learned at the camp. It's a tough business, and you guys do a tremendous job, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for you guys after doing the boot camp. You know, and if I get the opportunity, it will be something that I'd like to get into.
They work on a lot of different things, right, including game broadcasts.
Yep,
did you like that part of it?
It was one of the toughest things I did, but I think if I got a chance to do it, I would enjoy it a lot. You know, just we called the Super Bowl last week or last year.
Okay.
So we got to call two or three drives from that, and you know, I was happy with the outcome, so that made it a little bit easier to talk about. But no, it was a lot of fun to do. And you get to tell it from your perspective as a player who played in the game. So I think that would be an interesting that's what made it interesting for us to do it, is we were talking about it as if we were a player. So it was a lot of fun to do.
And you're home in Iowa, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's where you live now,
yep.
with those kids. But what do you think you want to do in the years ahead? What interests you? You're 37, which
yeah.
looks pretty young to me.
Yeah. that's what I try and tell people all the time. I was 34, and I was the oldest person at this. I was just like, I'm only 34. But you know, it's a lot of stuff. You know, I'm starting a football camp, you know, here in Buffalo. I'll be doing that. My first one will be in August. So I want to do that. I want to see how much more stuff I can get involved in here in Buffalo. You know, I would like to be an ambassador for this team. You know, I love the Buffalo Bills, and I would like to do as much work as I can, you know, for them and promoting the Buffalo Bills. So, if I get an opportunity to do that, I would love to do that. But, you know, like I said, as much as I can do for the city of Buffalo and in the city of Buffalo is what I want to do, or, you know, all of Western New York.
Fred, congratulations. It's a great way to go out, right, to retire as a Buffalo Bill after making your mark as a Buffalo Bill. That's the way to do it.
It is. I appreciate it, Murph. Thanks.
Thanks for coming by.
Yep.
Fred Jackson joining us. Thanks to all of you who've phoned in as well. Chris Brown and I coming back in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Well, that was fun. Fred Jackson joining us for the last half hour or so on the show as he officially retires as a Buffalo Bill. Stories, game stories, but more importantly, some of the stories that came about from Chris, from people who phoned in about encounters they had with Fred. That was pretty cool, and Fred remembers it. It's pretty cool.
I'm telling you, if you're I'm just picturing that kid, that teenage kid whose dad asked Fred to write a letter to his son.
Yeah.
To convince him to, like, keep pushing through with his academics. And you're a 15-year-old kid, you're a Bills fan, and Fred Jackson just wrote you a letter to say, hey, keep at it with your grades,
yeah.
education's important, whatever he wrote in there. And if I'm 15 and I'm getting that, I'm thinking to myself, holy crap, this is Fred Jackson telling me to stick with it. And then and then if you take the time to look at where Fred came from, being a Division III college athlete, and playing in the Continental Indoor Football League, and then being an NFL player, it's like, how can you not take the words to heart and appreciate them? I don't know if there could be a better motivator. That's why I'm trying to stick him in a Saturday night room with the Bills before a Sunday game for Coach McDermott. Get this team pumped up.
That is likely to happen. Now, a lot of people phoned in to say hello to Fred. We couldn't get you all on the air. Fred is still doing interviews, by the way, in the other room. We had to let him go. But let's take a few phone calls if you have something to say about Fred. Bobby and Clarence on the line. Go ahead, Bobby. Welcome to the show.
Hey, John. I want to thank you for your show, but I want to thank Fred Jackson for his passion and his sportsmanship that he always put on the field in Buffalo and the love for our city.
Okay. We will pass that along to Fred. That's a good point. He was very sportsman. Let's go to Mickey in Rochester. Hi, Mickey. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, so I really appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
Boy, you know, I really wanted to say some stuff to Fred, but I'll go ahead and say it. So, you know, one of the greatest compliments I ever heard about Fred Jackson was from probably one of the greatest defensive players of all time, and that's Ray Lewis. And I don't know if you remember that Ravens game where they had that controversial fumble at the end, but after that game, Ray Lewis came out and said that Fred Jackson is the very hardest running back that he's ever had to tackle. He says this guy just does not go down, and he's really difficult to tackle, and he's never faced a running back like Fred Jackson. The other things I remember about Fred Jackson was he's a leader. He exemplifies what being a Buffalo Bill is all about. And the games I remember the most, and the other thing I think about Fred is he's a warrior, warrior football. When I think of Fred, I think of him as a warrior. And the Giants game and the Ravens game, the Tennessee game, and, of course, my favorite game, the Patriots game, where they came from 21 points down and they beat them. So,
all right, thank you. Here's a call from Curtis in Niagara Falls. Go ahead, Curtis. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, John? What's going on?
No, not much. Thanks for calling in, Curtis.
I was thinking, you know, for years I've been trying to find this on YouTube, and I could not find this play where he scored this touchdown against the Jets. It looked like it was probably from 5-6 yards out, and it looked like he carried the entire defense into the end zone. That was my favorite Fred Jackson play.
There were a lot of those, Chris. There were a lot of plays where he ran through contact and broke contact and ran through traffic to get to the end zone or just to get even a yard or two more. I mean, he was – tough between the tackles, yeah. Fred Jackson was definitely that. Huh?
The style of his play was reminiscent of the road he had to travel to get to the NFL. He never quit in trying to realize his dream of playing in the NFL, and then once he got there, he ran like every day, every game was going to be his last game. And that's why he was so hard to tackle, because he wouldn't take Ray Lewis as an answer for going down. He was going to see if he could run through Ray Lewis or drag Ray Lewis or drag an entire Jets team, as the last caller said. He was uniquely passionate about this game. There's a lot of guys that are passionate about football, and, heck, Ray Lewis is probably another example with as fired up as he got about every game that he ever played in. But I think Fred was uniquely passionate about the game. And just talking to him yesterday, again, with the piece that he wrote that's on BuffaloBills.com right now. If you haven't seen it, you got to read it, because it's Fred in his own words talking about what his career meant to him, what the fans meant to him. It's Fred Jackson, Thank You Buffalo, on BuffaloBills.com. And he talked about wanting to give back to the fans because of what they gave him, their appreciation for him, their comments to him, oh, I love the way you run. He said that just made me want to run that way even harder. So you want to talk about a person that was buoyed by the support of the fans. I don't know if there was one who experienced that and lived that more than Fred did.
Hey, we thank Fred for joining us. We thank you for your comments. Fred Jackson officially retired as a Buffalo Bill today, signed the one-day contact and a contract. There's an interesting tweet which gets me thinking about why Fred Jackson is appreciated. I think this has something to do with it, Chris. A tweet from B-Man who says, it wasn't the best teams, but something about those years with Freddie was special. Thank you for everything.
It was entertaining.
True. Yeah. And there were characters, Fitz, Stevie. Freddie Jackson. There were characters and guys who, for the most part, played pretty hard. And the guy on Twitter's right. They weren't the most successful teams. They won 9 games one year and didn't make the playoffs. And still, with the effort put forth by Fred Jackson and others, they were eminently watchable, I think. There was never a time when I was bored or disinterested in the Buffalo Bills.
And I think that's what made the 2011 season so disappointing, because they got off to such a great start. I think they were 5-2 heading into midseason, and then Fred got hurt in early November, and they had already started to hit the skids there, you know, come week 8-9. Then Fred got hurt, and it's like they took the air out of the balloon. They lost 9 of their last 10 games that year. And that was the year, I thought. A lot of people thought. They started 3-0. Their third win, they beat the Patriots in comeback fashion. They beat the Raiders the week before, and it looked, people were saying this might be the year that we break the playoff drought. And unfortunately, Fred has the injury, can't continue. And I thought him not being there every day, you know, driving that team forward. I mean, it was a team captain. It was a loss. It was a big loss for them. And I just don't think they were ever able to kind of recapture their mojo, their momentum, to kind of get back in the win column. And try to find a way into the playoffs that year.
Hey, we've covered a lot of territory today, and we have a few minutes left. One of the things we talked about is the NFL schedule, which is released tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Want to hear from you about that. If you have any further thoughts on this, the regular season schedule will be announced 8 p.m. tomorrow. What are you looking for from the Bills schedule? Who do you want them to open the season with? Who do you want them to play in a primetime game? Which opponent are you most looking forward to seeing? Give us a call. We got a couple of minutes left to discuss. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. We also have NFL True and False. Are you familiar with this little game we play here?
I am. I've done it before.
True and False, NFL. Let's get it started. Here's an interesting proposition. Wade Phillips, former Bills head coach, defense coordinator. Wade Phillips is more important to whatever success the Rams have than head coach Sean McVay. That's been put out there by some people who think that's the case. They've got a lot of new defensive talent. Wade Phillips earlier this week said he doesn't have to manage the new personalities, but clearly he has to put them in a position to succeed. But is Wade more important to the Rams' success than their head coach Sean McVay? What do you think?
I'm still going to say false. That team was successful last year. Defense played well, don't get me wrong, and the defense was talented. But that team turned the corner last year because of what they were able to do on offense, most notably with Jared Goff, and kind of turning him from a bust into a promising quarterback in this league. That credit falls squarely on the shoulders of Sean McVay, and they turned into a juggernaut-type offense. Certainly they had the talent to do it, but he still put it all together, and I think he was probably the quintessential reason why they were able to reach the postseason for the first time in a long time. Wade is going to have to manage some personalities. I mean, Ndamukong Suh is there now. Aaron Donald's there. Those two guys, how are they going to work together? Hopefully well. He's got Aqib Talib there. He did a good job of managing his personality in Denver. But Wade isn't big on managing personalities. He's bigger on tolerating them, yeah, in my opinion. So I'm going to say false.
I'm going to say false, too, mostly because I think there's still work for McVay to do with that offense and with that young quarterback. You know, 3 years from now, maybe a different story. But, yes, they had a successful season last year. McVay did a great job with Jared Goff. He's going to have to do it again. I think he's more important than Wade Phillips. I go false. Here's one, NFL, true or false. Saquon Barkley, running back, Penn State. Safest pick in the draft, that's what Mel Kiper said in answer to a question. He is the safest guy in this class, his top-ranked prospect. Mel Kiper says, Barkley is a true three-down back who has an elite grade for me. He's going to be a star. We had a guest on the show yesterday from Our Lad's Guide, Dan Shaka, who said, as soon as Barkley takes the field in the NFL, Chris, he'll be one of the top five players in the game. So Barkley, the safest pick in the draft, I say yes, true.
I would say safest to make an immediate impact, because all these quarterbacks, you don't know when they're going to play.
Right.
A lot of these guys that may get picked before him may have to wait. So I'll say true, too. I think there's another very safe pick in the draft, and that's Quentin Nelson. I mean, that's a guy you're going to plug in at guard, and he's going to play there for the next 10 years, barring injury. So there's a couple of safe guys, but I would say Barkley is probably at the top of the list. I say true.
And finally, NFL true or false, the Chargers, Los Angeles Chargers, need to draft Phillip Rivers' replacement this year in the draft. Rivers talked about it at the podium when the Chargers showed up for their offseason conditioning program. He said, I look around at places, some guys that have had far more success than I have had. But he said, yeah, as an organization, you've got to prepare for down the road. He thinks they do need to select his replacement. I don't know if it's urgency, though. I'm going to go false on this. I don't know if it has to happen next week in the draft, but sometime in the next year or so.
Yeah.
I think.
I say false based on where they sit. They're down there at 17. I guess if they fall in love with Mason Rudolph, maybe they go there, but that might be reaching a little bit for him. Who knows? I mean, maybe GM Tom Telesco likes somebody, you know, in the second round or third round that they think they can groom for a couple of years. But they've invested a lot of time in Cardale Jones since acquiring him. And they picked up Geno Smith in free agency. Now, I'm not saying those guys are the replacement for Phillip Rivers long term, but it looks like they've got a couple of guys they want to work with now to see if they could develop into an answer at quarterback for them. So my inclination is that quarterback in the draft is on the back burner for the Chargers.
I think so. NFL true and false, presented by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show with Chris Brown. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Tony Pauline on from DraftScout.com. He is their draft scout writer. Tony Pauline, a qualified and experienced draft expert. We asked him what possibly could be the price in terms of draft picks if the Bills intend on trading up and getting to number two in the draft in a trade with the Giants. Here's what he said.
What's going to influence it is how what the supply, what the demand is for that pick. You know, are there other teams that want to move up for that pick? The other factor is going to be how motivated are the Giants to move down? Do the Giants want one of the quarterbacks, or do they want Saquon Barkley? I reported a week ago that there is a blueprint in place for that trade between the Bills and the Giants to happen. In fact, I've been told that basically there is an agreement in principle for the compensation for that trade to happen. Doesn't necessarily mean that the trade is going to happen. You got to see if the Giants basically want to sit there and see what other offers they receive, or are they that high on a guy like Saquon Barkley or one of the quarterbacks.
Tony Pauline of DraftAnalyst.com. Also on the show today, obviously, we heard and talked with Fred Jackson, who signed a one-day contract with the Buffalo Bills today, officially retiring as a Buffalo Bill after a couple of years since he left Buffalo. Fred Jackson, we asked him what made him decide to come back here and make this move today.
The support that I got from the fans, you know, whenever I was around or wherever a fan, you know, came up to me, one of the things they would say to me is, when are you going to sign that one-day contract as a Buffalo Bill? And, you know, it was something that I always wanted to do. And had the opportunity to talk to the guys upstairs, and they said, yeah, we can make it happen. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, okay, it's a done deal. I'm going to sign that one-day contract. And, you know, I wanted to do it when it was best for everybody. You know, right now is easy. You know, I don't want to distract from what's going on with the team during the season. And to be able to do it right now and then go into the draft is something that I wanted to do.
Fred Jackson, great to talk with him. Great to have him here. And I think you're on to something. I can just see Sean McDermott bringing him back here for a Saturday night hotel.
That's a given.
Right?
That is a given.
It's great. It's great. I hope that happens. Hey, I want to get you back to Tony Pauline's comments, Chris, on his report that there is an agreement in principle. He reported this a week ago. I do recall reading that and talked to him about it, between the Bills and the Giants for that move to happen, which is not to say that that'll happen. But I'm interested in that, and I tried to pin him down to find out what he knew. What do you make of that? What do you think that means, that Gettleman and Brandon Bean have had a conversation? Like, if you give us this, this could get you up to number two? Is he?
Well, yeah,
that?
It probably goes like this. We're interested in the number two pick. You know, let's talk about it. What do you think it will take to get there? What do you need from us? What are you looking for if you're going to move out of there? And they have the discussion. And if they have an agreement in principle, so be it. I think the only thing that prevents that from happening is if someone is on the board at two that the Giants covet and don't believe has a chance of being there wherever they're going, whether it's 12 or somewhere else with a third
team. Like Darnold.
Right. So I believe that the Giants, based on what I've heard from people I know that cover the Giants, they like Sam Darnold in the quarterback pool the best and is the only one they would consider at two. I don't think they think a whole lot of the other quarterback prospects to use the second overall pick on anybody but him. So now it becomes a question of what are the Browns doing at one. So if the Browns take Darnold at one, I think there's a chance that the Giants are open for business at two. And maybe one of those agreements in principle, because I got to believe they've got more than one agreement in principle in place.
Giants.
I don't think the Giants are just talking to one team right now.
Why would they?
I think we'd be foolish to think they are. I think there are multiple teams that are interested in getting up to two, because I think everybody full well believes that the Jets are taking a quarterback at three. So knowing the Browns are taking one at one, Jets are taking one at three, I think there is an impetus for a lot of teams interested in getting one of the top quarterback prospects to get up to two in some way, shape, or form.
Less than a minute to go here, but if they have that agreement in principle, and this is all hypothetical, and if the Bills know that the Giants' man is Darnold, does that mean Darnold is not the Bills' first selection at quarterback?
I don't think they know for sure that Darnold's their guy. From what everything I'm hearing is Darnold is the quarterback they would spend the number two pick on if he's on the board. I just don't know if the Giants are convinced he will be there. I think there is still a strong chance that the Browns take him at one.
Yeah.
And then at that point, Gettleman's probably open for business.
It's going to be fun. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. Chris is back with us tomorrow. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, George Blass, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito. Our producer, Jay Harris, will see you tomorrow at noon with Chris. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.